Good evening, everyone. Welcome to National Liberty Alliance's weekly conference call. Today is Monday, July 13th, 2020. We broadcast live every Monday, 9 p.m. Eastern till midnight. If you're listening live over our radio or another network and you would like to ask a question or make a comment, go to National Liberty Alliance and click on our weekly call for instructions to join us by phone, app, or browser. If anyone would like to email a question, you can send your questions to questions, that's plural questions, at nationallibertyalliance.org. Also, please support our business partners. You can find their banners on the right-hand side of the website, for which the proceeds go to support NLA's effort to save America. Also, please support NLA by donating $5 a month or more. Click on our donation tab on the top right-hand side of our website. Okay, tonight's scripture reading, we're going to pick up where we left off last week. We were in Romans chapter 12. Let me get over to that window. Okay, here we go. We read Romans chapter 12 last week, so we're in 13. We're reading in the book of Romans chapter 13. Let every soul be subject unto the higher power, for there is no power but of God. The powers that are, that be, are ordained of God. Whosoever therefore resisteth the power resisteth the ordinance of God, and they that resist shall receive to themselves damnation. For rulers are not a terror to good works, but to the evil. Wilt thou then not be afraid of the power? Do that which is good, and thou shalt have praise of the same. For he is the minister of God to thee for good. But if thou do that which is evil, be afraid, for he beareth not the sword in vain. For he is the minister of God, a revenger to execute wrath upon him that doeth evil. Wherefore, ye must needs be subject, not only for wrath, but also for conscience' sake. For this cause pay ye tribute also, for they are God's ministers, attending continually upon this very thing. Render therefore to all their dues, tributes to whom tribute is due, custom to whom custom, fear to whom fear, honor to whom honor. Owe no man anything but to love one another, for he that loveth another hath fulfilled the law. For this thou shalt not commit adultery, thou shalt not kill, thou shalt not steal, thou shalt not bear false witness, thou shalt not covet. And if there be any other commandment, it is briefly comprehended in this saying, namely, thou shalt love thy neighbor as thyself. Love worketh no ill to his neighbor. Therefore, love is the fulfilling of the law. And that knowing the time, that now it is high time to awake out of our sleep, for now is our salvation nearer than when we believed. The night is far spent, the day is at hand. Let us therefore cast off the works of darkness, and let us put on the armor of light. Let us walk honestly as in the day, not in rioting and drunkenness, not in chambering and wantingness, not in strife and envying, but put on our Lord Jesus Christ, and make not provisions for the flesh to fulfill the lust thereof. That was the book of Romans, chapter 13. Okay, I don't have a subject matter particularly tonight, so we're going to go right over to see if we have any announcements first, and then any questions that have come in through the email. Jan?
Yes, we have a number of questions tonight, John.
Okay, do we have any announcements, though?
I haven't received any, and I didn't get one ready yet.
So, okay, Terry, are you aware of any announcements or anything? Okay. I guess Terry's asleep.
No, Terry couldn't find her mouse, and then Terry couldn't find the mute button. Terry didn't hear anything. So Terry's kind of 0-3 right now.
Yeah, sounds like my house. Okay, so nothing to be... Well, I got an announcement or two. I mean, basically, we need more help.
I do, too, along those lines, John.
All right. Anyway... Do you have anything to pipe in before we get started?
Yeah.
Which I'll be passing things over to you shortly.
Looking for help in a specific area, you know, because Ollie's helping make some tools for the sheriffs. You know, we're working with going to be working with sheriffs. That's our next big step. And he has an interactive map that he's making where you just click on it. It gives you the sheriff's department. It actually gives you everything in the state. It links to their site, to the sheriff's site. It also links to the governor. It's really neat. He's got it half done right now. It's kind of working good. And so he needs somebody or a couple of people that can help him because it's very time consuming. But he's finally got the program worked out so he could give a tutorial to somebody, give him an instruction sheet. It's Adobe Fireworks. It's an older program, but he bought the key and it works really well. And if anybody knows anything about that and is willing to help us along to get this map done, because it's going to be a good tool for the sheriffs, too, to keep in contact with the other sheriffs of every county in the United States with the click of a finger. And it lists the governor and all their contact numbers. And you know, it taps into each state and county's website, so it's kind of cool, you know, when you hover over the state and then a little drop downs come sheriff, governor, legislator, you know, and website. So he could use help because he spent many hours getting it to this point, but he's got it to the point that anybody that's even a little bit computer savvy, he can give them a tutorial and they could go through and make life easier and get this thing ready. Help them get it ready anyway. So that's what I'm looking for. I don't, you know, got to be not terribly computer savvy, but you know, you should be able to navigate a computer. And if you know anything about Adobe Fireworks, that's even better. So that's where we are right now. Okay.
Okay, thanks, Gerard. Mm-hmm. Okay, we do need a lot of people to help save the nation, literally. A lot of people, literally, to save the nation. You know, Trump's doing a great job and everything, but only the people can save America. People need to realize and understand that, and so people need to get a proper education to do that. That's why we put our course together. Gerard, you might want to mute your mic. That's why we put our course together. Consent of Government, and we also have a book coming out very shortly, I hope. I got my fingers crossed. And I got my book out to a couple of, different...
Publishers?
What do you call them, huh?
Publishers?
Publishers, that's the word I'm looking for. A couple of publishers. I've been hanging out with Gerard too long. Anyway, I got out to a couple of publishers. I'm hoping to get good news, and hopefully we'll get that done that way. If not, I'll have to go through Amazon or some other thing to print them out, but I prefer a publisher for numerous reasons. And hopefully that'll be out soon, and then maybe once that's out, we should get a copy to our sheriffs. We are working diligently to try to connect with sheriffs, and we want to try to connect sheriffs with people, and we need people in the county that are willing, ready, and able, and they should be starting right now to prepare for that, to be able to get things going. And even if you're only a placeholder in order to get things going, to have a meeting, we do have a plan set up. We speak about this. We spoke last week a little bit about this. And under People's Duty, if you click on Organizing Your County, we have a detailed plan on how to pull together and create grassroots within each county, get the grassroots people involved, and the militia involved in the committeeman, and also in the jury administrators, and then many other people to do many things. We also need some people on the national level. We need some more district leaders. We broke the nation up into 10 districts, and you know, so many states in each district, and it's all within the time zones. So we're looking for more people to assist us as district leaders. We're looking for state coordinators to organize their state as far as trying to work out to get all their counties active and going, to get people down into the grassroots level within their counties, and then connect them with the sheriff. In some cases, hopefully, we will be able to tie a sheriff already introduced to this thing and meet up. You know, not too many of them, but I'm sure we got some that will be coming up soon. And but from the other direction, the people, we have a plan on how the people will approach the sheriff. We'll be able to hopefully soon use sheriffs to assist sheriffs to realize the importance of what we're doing and what they're doing, and how the processes within the courts particularly work for them. You know, I was surprised to find this out a couple of weeks ago. I think we spoke a little bit last week about this, but... I was very surprised to find out that prosecutors, back in history, I learned this from Brent, but there is no history of prosecutors approaching, dealing with, talking to the grand jury. It's the sheriff. If a prosecutor has, and this is a game changer here, because no more funny business, no more pals going, taking care of each other's criminal activities, covering up for each other between judges and prosecutors and other attorneys and so on and so forth. But if a prosecutor wants to bring a case up, they need to bring it to the sheriff. Generally speaking, cases are brought up from law enforcement and maybe through the court system somehow, but through law enforcement, generally, usually, cases are brought up before the prosecutor, and the prosecutor will then bring it into the grand jury and look for an indictment. But no more ham sandwiches. We want to eliminate that completely because history doesn't show us. Common law does not provide for that. And it does make sense that everything goes through the sheriff. And that opens everything up for everyone. Anybody who has a problem or situation, they can then go to their local sheriff or to the administrators, and they can take them to the local sheriff, but basically to file a complaint with the local sheriff, and then they'll be taken seriously. Because right now, they get to pick and choose, the prosecutors pick and choose what cases they're going to go through. You know, when we first started this thing, well, not exactly when we first started this thing, but I guess when we started to really work into the courts, we were working in the courts for a while. We were moving forward with, you know, the court processes and trying to get people involved in order to take the control of the grand jury process and the trial jury process. And so early on when we started that, we did approach a sheriff up in one of the counties nearby, I think it was Greene County, and of a crimes that were taking place by, you know, some judges down the judges who control all of New York. They were like the top 8 judges, and I think we were going after 4 or 5 of them. We did convince the sheriff's lieutenant, who had some background in law, of what we're doing and of the crime, and they were kind of on board to some degree with it, it seemed, anyway. We had some conversations with them, but they said, hey, you got to go through the prosecutor, and that becomes a major problem now, because you go to the prosecutor, they are not willing, this prosecutor wasn't willing, of that county wasn't willing to go after judges. But we know sheriffs, there is no connection with them, there is no you know, covering up for each other. So, you know, they, you know, going through the sheriff makes a lot more sense and opens it up for everybody. So if you go down and file a complaint, a criminal complaint with the sheriff, as long as he can see that there's some, you know, enough evidence to be able to bring it before a grand jury, they will do it. And, of course, they can always bring it to the jury administrators, and they'll assist them to work with the sheriff. In some cases, you know, we were looking at potentially the jury administrators bringing cases also before the grand jury. But it makes sense if it's a criminal thing to really send it over to the sheriff. They have the background and the skills and of investigating and putting together a case to be able to deliver it where they normally would have delivered it over to the prosecutor. Now they go directly to the grand jury. And also that will prevent prosecutors from adding charges, taking away charges, or trying to make a deal, because that's not available. If people want to make a deal, they need to go and really talk to the grand jury, and the grand jury might be able to work a deal out if they approach the injured party and see if they're interested in that without having to go to court and get their restitution. Common law is all about restitution. It's not all about putting people in jail, although sometimes people, they belong there, but it's not what it's about. So, again, this opens the door to access to our juries, access to our grand juries, the prevention of stacking juries and tainting the juries and so on. Anyway, yeah, there's a lot of noise coming through. Maybe you can keep yourself muted there.
I just wanted to break in, and I'm trying to get to a spot. I just want to make a clarification for anybody that doesn't understand. When you say prosecutor, you're talking about your district attorney. They're the same, and they're elected around here. I don't know if they're elected in every other state, but the district attorney is an elected official, and he's one. He is the prosecutor. So just so you know, when John says prosecutor, he's talking about your county district attorney. And of course, they have multiple ADAs in a county, assistant district attorneys. So you should understand, you know, how that runs. And they're not going to be very kind to this, because what we're doing away with is a whole thing that's worked up, this whole, what do you want to call it, there's a group, this government organization, and they rely heavily on each other, and they basically run the courts, and they run the county. It's the most powerful position in the county. Matter of fact, we helped the guy get elected judge, and after 4 years, he stepped down and went back to prosecutor, and when I asked him why, he said, because the prosecutor has more authority and more opportunities to make a difference in a county than the judge ever does. So he understood the power of the prosecutor. So that's all I got. I just want to make sure people understand that the prosecutor and the district attorney are one and the same.
Okay. And, you know, this does kind of pose a problem for us that we have to work out. And because, you know, we here in the, you know, in the United States, each state is an individual sovereign state. But then we have the nation, which is the United States of America, you know, the federal government. And so we have a federal prosecutor and different things that take place there. And we can see, or those of us who are paying attention and listening in the right places, we're seeing all of the work that's being done behind the scenes. For instance, there are 200, I believe, or 100 or 200 indictments already up and out, and people being arrested, you know, for all of these destructive actions going on in a lot of these cities across the United States. And I understand there's another 500 indictments in process, and probably more than that. And that's really involved. That involves a lot of investigation. I know the people, the U.S. attorneys particularly, are highly trained and highly educated. The thing we have to worry about is making sure they're properly educated. But it becomes a problem when trying to figure out, well, okay, who brings the case before before the grand jury on a federal level. The sheriff is not trained enough. I mean, it would take quite a bit of an education to get the sheriff to be educated enough to really get involved very deeply onto that level, because it then gets involved with, of course, codes and regulations and statutes that do apply to individuals that are active in commercial activities, and or maybe different government agencies where maybe some crimes are going on, like we see, of course, with the FBI and the Justice Department and so on, and within our government itself, you know. So, you know, we'll be meeting and looking into that to see exactly who should be, you know, bringing the charges up in those cases. It may make sense in that area to allow a U.S. attorney, the federal prosecutor, to bring the cases, you know, before the grand jury. But a couple of things we do need to do, and that is because we see that they have books, for instance, these handbooks, not only for the prosecutor himself, but also, of course, for the grand jury and the trial jury. And there's a procedure and a process by the way that they choose the juries. And all of that really gets involved in stacking, trying to get the right group of people for the right particular crime that they're trying to get a conviction for. So they're really just stacking the whole deck here against an individual, whether they're guilty or not. Also, they're not coming from the perspective of restitution. But, of course, on that level, I don't think there's much in the way of restitution, generally speaking. You know, it's a public at large that's being injured. It's we the people that are being injured in a lot of these crimes by people who are working for different federal agencies, and of course on the commercial activity, maybe whatever trafficking is going on, illegal trafficking from state to state and so on and so forth. So we're going to have to revisit our thinking on how we were going to approach that. But I think it might make sense to permit them, and I literally mean permit them. Remember, we the people are sovereign. We the people make the law. We the people ordained and established the Constitution for the United States of America. We the people are under common law. And any kind of a criminal accusation against any individual, even individuals that are working for the government, they need to be in a court of record, and they need to be. It needs to run properly, and we can't have tainted juries. So I think we can probably fix a lot of that by writing the books, these booklets of process and procedures, and how they approach the juries, how they choose the juries, and how they talk to the juries. And if we can strengthen or tighten up that process, and make those changes, you know, they will, because they do proceed according to their own regulations. You know, there are some 57, I think, it's 57 codes out there, half of which is what's called positive law. The other half is administrative, a lot of it regulations, procedures, and policies and procedures kind of things on how things go, certain penalties if they break it, and so on. So we have to look a little into that, but I think we can probably work that out and maybe just kind of keep an eye on them. There's 94 federal district courts, but also there is, you know, a lot of courts in each district. For instance, you go up to the Northern District here, I think there's like three or four federal courts in the Northern District here of New York. They're all part of the Northern District, though. So there's quite a few courts, so it would be spread out for a lot of us. But within the counties, you know, we might be able to work something out with that. But the other thing is this. Federal prosecutors, prior to, I believe it was 1972, did not have the authority to call a grand jury. And I've been looking a little bit, trying to find some history. I haven't dug deep yet, but I've been looking, you know, kind of just trying to get a little information, running some Google keywords, trying to get information on that. But I'll have to dig down deeper to see how did they operate things on a federal level prior to 1972? You know, who addressed the grand jury? So we have to look into that. But it will be a little different than what common law is used to, because remember, you know, we have the states, which is one thing, and then we have the federal government, of course, which is another thing, and in common law, I don't see any kind of a relationship that we can look into to see how that would operate, because it was really just the king and the people way back when.
John?
So anyway, yeah.
I wanted to say, if the federal government is operating in the sphere that it was meant to, you won't have a lot of problems with the prosecutor, because it's going to be statutes of government people.
Right, but we still want to make sure in criminal cases that they do get
justice. Here's the deal, the sheriff is still the top cop, and I'll bet you're going to find that when a federal prosecutor wanted to bring a case, he brought it to the sheriff of the county. Because, look at the sheriff, if somebody gets if a federal prosecutor is going to grab somebody for something and he's violating his rights, where's that guy going to go for help? He's going to go to his local sheriff, isn't he? Even though it's a federal case. And he's going to say, look, they're violating my unalienable rights. Well, if the sheriff's not the top cop, he's not going to have control over that prosecutor, is he? I mean, we already know. We already say that the sheriff is above the feds, and so why don't we just keep it like that? If there's a problem.
Well, it makes logical sense that way. And again, that's how we originally set it up. Thinking that way, but again, we didn't realize that the prosecutor doesn't have power or authority. It doesn't matter that you know, we did not give the authority to our legislators to write legislation for the purpose of them involving themselves in courts of law. When it comes to the equity side of things, they can work their situations out any way they want. But when it comes to a criminal case against a federal agent or someone in commercial activities that they have control over, and they wanted to bring some kind of a criminal action against an individual, we have to figure that out. And maybe what you're saying, Gerard, is the thing we will do. It is kind of the plan we did have. But, you know, again, you know, we'll talk with Brent, and maybe we'll try to get some other people involved to get some information.
And I also want to say,
to find out how things work. But we do have to realize one thing, but it's not so much of a big deal for the sheriff to be able to look and read words out of a code. You know, if the code violations are given to the sheriff, and the sheriff can, you know, it's only a matter of looking and say, you know, you read the words, you understand the crime. Very simple. You know, so the sheriff can bring that information, but maybe a prosecutor could do a better job, or maybe we'll, and again, we can't solve this problem tonight. But we really have to think and research it out and see how things work. But maybe a partnership, in a sense, for the moment of dealing with the grand jury, with the sheriff and the prosecutor together, maybe that's the way to go, or having an administrator being there with the prosecutor to make sure no abuses takes place. Because that is the problem. When you have an individual who works for the federal government getting a federal paycheck, and they're trying to bring a particular charges against an individual that's working for the government or involved in commercial activity, you know, again, there's a lot of fugazi things going on there. We already know that on the federal level. And to realize that on a huge way, all you have to do is read the handbooks. I was just appalled by the handbooks. And by the way, we do have a copy of the handbooks up online, and we've written our own handbooks on these things. But we do have their handbooks up there, and anybody who reads through it, they would be appalled. You know, this process of trying to get rid of jurors shouldn't even wash. If you know, there are certain things that would disqualify a jurist. There's a general list of things that we have been working through to lay out the program that would disqualify an individual to sit as a jurist, whether it's a grand jury or trial jurist, in a general way. I mean, in one situation, for instance, they need to be able to speak English and understand English. I mean, that is key, because the court case will be taking place in English. So you couldn't really put an individual up on a jury that doesn't speak English or doesn't speak it or speaks it very little. And there are other things that may disqualify an individual. We're working through that. We're seeing what the federal government has used prior. We're looking at some of the states, what they have used, and we're looking to things that are just obvious and illogical, because really these are just logical questions. Now, if the individual, when they come up before the, you know, to be chosen, okay, if there are certain questions that would disqualify them that either the prosecutor or the defense might ask, and disqualify them for certain things, and we're making a list of that. You know, there are certain things that are obvious that we would disqualify them for. You know, if they had a personal relationship with the individual up on trial or something like that. But other than that, you know, there's a lot of games that go on trying to get rid of individuals because of their philosophy, how they live their life, their lifestyle, and things. And they get that information from their questionnaires. You know, what news stations do you listen to? Do you watch cop shows? Do you have a gun? Do anybody in your family have a weapon? Do you know anybody, any of your friends have weapons? I mean, they ask some really seriously out-of-line questions. So we have to eliminate all that and really get down to the nuts and bolts. So those are things we'll be working on and trying to put together and lay it out. But let's look. We'll look back to see what they did before 1972, let's say. We'll look back and think about, and we'll also brainstorm these ideas on maybe the sheriff being partnership in this, or maybe the sheriff on its own. That would mean that the indictment would probably make sense to take place at the state level within, well, maybe not. Again, there could be a conflict there. Maybe then they would have to travel over to the federal court and have the grand jury chosen there. But again, these are things that we don't have the answers to yet. But
the other thing is, there's a federal indictment, but when you're picking the petit jury for the trial, I think it's important to keep the local sheriff in that, because it should be a jury of his peers. And we haven't even discussed, and as a matter of fact, we got to talk to Dar and the other sheriff, because they got some ideas on exactly what we're talking about tonight, because they've done some research. So we should think about getting a meeting with these guys and see what they think about it. But
well, we're hoping to get a meeting up soon. I don't really want to discuss too much of that right now.
And the other thing I was going to say is, you know, there's federal marshals we haven't even talked about. They're appointed by the president, and they're law enforcement on the federal end. And how do they play into this whole picture, too? You know, that's
a possibility. I'm not really seeing the marshals playing that role, but I guess the possibility is there. And again, we have no clue on this. We're just talking and putting things out. And really, we do need to do some brainstorming and conclusions. Then we have to do some research. And we probably need to, of course, do some research prior to our meeting and then get the insight from the sheriffs that we do have some kind of a relationship with and work all these things out. I just wanted to bring this introduction up. And one of the most important things here is getting the sheriffs involved with the people on the grassroots level. And that being the case, hopefully that would encourage a lot of people who are sitting there like a lump on a log and they're not stepping up to take control of their counties. You know, there are people, you know, we have a lot of people that come to this program. We have people listen on the radio. We have people come and listen to the programming afterwards. And we send out email. We have information on our website. But we really are not getting enough people to become activated. If people aren't going to become activated and get involved in their county, which is not a big deal, it means coming to a meeting once a week. You know, And it should be exciting to come to a meeting once a week. What, I mean, once a month, I'm sorry. What's the big deal about that? 12 days out of the 12 two-hour sessions or whatever, you know, meeting with people that are like-minded, that have a desire to bring law and order back, to recapture our nation, to truly have government by consent, because this is how you do it, through the militia, the committeemen, and the juries. This is exactly how we control our elected officials and our appointed individuals, and also people who are just employed. We have total control over them through those three processes. And of course, the sheriff fits into that, so there's really four things going on here. So people need to get involved. People need to step up and say, well, okay, get in touch with your district leader. They will connect you with people within your county and try to get people activated within your county. Once you get two or three people meeting in your county, maybe the other 10, 20, or whatever people in the county that are signed up with NLA, they will say, well, hey, let me go to one of these meetings and see how it goes. We have a plan on how the meetings go. We got to keep it exciting, informative, educational, and something that is usable in order to give us the authority, the powers that the people should be picking up and taking control of. So, again, I want to, you know, try to really encourage people to start getting involved. Let's get into the courses, get an education, and remember, you know, look at you go through the course. It's a long course in the sense that I think it's I don't know how long the course actually takes. I know Terry or Gerard or Jan or anybody, if you know approximately how long it takes to go through that course, maybe you can pipe that into us over the audio here. But you know, go through the course. You could do it on your own time. When you get to the end, you're not going to remember everything, but you'll have a good flavor, a good understanding. You'll have a different insight, a different mindset, a different appreciation, a different understanding of law and equity, of liberty and freedom, and the power and the authority of the people. You know, to come to an appreciation, one of the things the course should deliver into your psyche is the fact that we are the lawmakers. People need to understand that we don't elect people to go as legislators in our state or in the federal level. We don't elect them to go to make statutes and any kind of a code that controls us. No, we control them. We've already codified our will in the Constitution. We've given them the authorities. We've laid out the jurisdictions and given them their authorities and how far they can go. And then, of course, Congress came up with the 57 different codes that lay out the controls, the regulations of these people. And when they're applied in that fashion, it works perfectly, and it's perfectly logical and acceptable. But there are, of course, some things that may be need to be nullified, and that'll be up to the juries to nullify that. Whether a grand jury wants to nullify it altogether, a particular code being applied against an individual for whatever purpose, or even a trial jurist wants to nullify it. So they will decide. The sovereign makes the law, okay? And there is only two sovereigns, ultimately. You know, the state is eclipsed sovereign. The federal government is eclipsed sovereign, okay, and they're under the control of the people. They don't act that way because they don't know it, and people don't know it, and that's why they lord over the people. The people have to lord over the government. But there are only two sovereigns. There's the sovereign of the universe, which is the sovereign over all, and that brings us under natural law. Of course, that's the Creator God. And then there is the people. We living under the blessings of God through our Declaration of Independence, which is really an agreement with God. It's a covenant with God, receiving His blessings and to live under His law, okay, and to be judged under His law, and under God's law, restitution is the focus, not necessarily putting people in jail. Of course, again, I get back to there are situations where that must be, but generally speaking, you know, it's restitution. The state goes and prosecutes the federal, which is a state, of course, also, but they go to prosecute, and maybe they take all of everything away from the wrongdoer. Maybe they seize their home, their vehicles, and, and other things, and maybe they find them, or whatever takes place. And what does the state do with that? They put it back into the state. Actually, it goes into the pockets of a lot of people, I believe. But that's what it's not where it should go. It should go to the injured party, or at least a piece of that should go to the injured party. And any of those things that are seized really should go to a place where the people can get that restitution, or, you know, from when they're wronged by an individual. Anyway, we have to work out how things are going to work on a federal level, and we will do that. That'll be our focus over the next couple of weeks to a month. But let me get back to help. We need people's help. We need people to organize their county. If you are a district leader, you not only should be working your district to help the state leaders, or coordinators, which is district coordinators also, working to work with them, and in the state leadership or coordinators are working with the county organizers or the people in the county that are actually in the grassroots level, that are where the rubber meets the road, where the work gets done, where the people get involved and take control of their local government all the way up into the federal government, because they have a say from their perspective from within their political subdivisions. And to learn about those subdivisional breakdowns and the boundaries and everything, that you'll learn a lot about within the committee map. But anyway, our course covers all of these things, but it gives you a mindset, and the important mindset is for the people to realize that we are the sovereign and we make the law, okay? And we've done that already, and we have to make sure that they don't go outside of that. When they write codes and regulations trying to control the regular individual, well, then they've overstepped their power and authority, and they need to be pressed back and shut down. And right now, they're out of control, and the people believe they have this power. The people think they have this authority. The people think, for instance, I know we got some questions up coming up on masks. Okay, the people think or have a fear that these people have some control over them and can require them to have a mask and they could be arrested. Not so. And I don't think it's anything to worry about because I don't think we're going to be in this situation much longer. I'm seeing things are going to be getting ready to change and all that's going to fall apart. The bottom line is, though, we need help and we need people to get educated. We're looking for district leaders, we're looking for state coordinators, and we're looking for those state coordinators and district leaders and anybody else that wants to get involved on the county level to organize their counties. And the plan is here, how to organize your county. You know, organizing begins with one person taking the initiative to get things going by finding the other person and one other person and then another and another until you have four people or more willing to hold or temporarily hold the following executive positions: chairman, co-chairman, treasurer, and secretary. And so any committee that comes together, any group that works together, they kind of have to work from that process. You need a chairman to maintain the flow of the meeting and the conversation. You need a treasurer, of course, to take care of the whatever funds are collected and figure out how it's spent and, you know, give an accounting of that on a monthly basis, and a secretary to maintain all of the necessary paperwork involved. I'm just going to read a little bit of this. In the beginning, you should meet somewhere convenient for coffee on a Saturday morning or evening after work to start discussing ideas whenever you want. It could be just two people in the beginning. Continue meeting off the fly at least once a week for 20 minutes or more, or even talk on the phones, or even through Skype, until you have these four positions filled. Once you organize the aforesaid committee, you find a venue in your county that is centrally located, making it convenient for all to travel to, like libraries, town halls seem to be the best, in my opinion, private clubs, back room of a bar or a restaurant or a diner, so on and so forth. Centrally located, it doesn't mean centrally located within the county. It depends on the population and where the mass of that population is, and try to find a place that's convenient so that nobody's got to travel all the way, if it's a big county, all the way across the county. Maybe it'd take them 45 minutes to an hour to travel all the way across the county. Well, if it's an hour, we should be able to get locations that nobody should have to drive any more than maybe a half hour or 20 minutes to get to that meeting. So people have to work that out. Anyway, I'm not going to read through this page. People should read through it. This is a plan. People have more ideas that they want to, you know, add on to this that we may have missed and say, hey, what about this or that? And we'll add it into this. And, of course, groups or people will, who are free and independent, we do want to create a uniform process across the nation, whether it be the militia, whether it be working with the grand and trial juries, whether it be the committee man, or really the or even the meetings and communicating with the sheriff. We want to basically be somewhat uniformed, because this way we can communicate county to county, state to state, from one county on one end of the nation to a county on the other side of the nation, or the state, or whatever. But we do want to have some kind of uniformity. So we've created that structure. And of course, each county is different. People have different problems, different situations. So, you know, they'll work things out on their own. However, they got to, you know, structure themselves and deal with situations. Some counties, some people might have a certain problem that another people in another county might not have, and they'll be more focused on that, where the other county they wouldn't. So again, we're free and independent, but we should try to work out things in a uniform manner so that we do have communications and are able to understand each other to some degree of our problems and the way we're structured and so on. Okay. So anyway, people should go through this. People need to get involved. Get a hold. We do have, if you go to our directory, okay, and you click on district leaders, you can find your district leader here. We do need more district leaders. One district leader for a district is not enough. If they, like, let's take District 3, which is only has three states. So let's take District 4, which has four states, Utah, Colorado, Arizona, and New Mexico. They're all in the same time zone, okay? So that should be a convenience, and there should be a district leader there. Maybe all four state coordinators should participate with the district leader, and there should be five district leaders, four coming from the state coordinators, holding a state coordinator position, and a district leader. Basically, it's the flow of information and the whole purpose of, you know, creating these things in this way, the districts and the states and the counties, in order to fill the positions on the county level so that we become active in every county across the nation. So anyway, people need to get involved because only the people can save America. That's it, bottom line. And if we don't take control of these things, guess who's going to take control? Government and individuals, elected, appointed, hired, whatever. They're going to fill that power structure. They're going to fill that vacuum that's going to be there once the deep state is gone and out. So everybody should get involved. Okay, let me move from there. We'll go over to questions. Do we have many questions, Jen?
Yeah, okay. First question tonight. Would now be a good time for committees of safety to do something in response to the forced masking? Two or three cities here in Montana will have or soon be requiring masks to go into public places. I've heard that courts in different areas are pushing back on this already around the U.S. This seems like a good way to get folks all around the U.S. doing something and at a local level learn and get results. With the courts around the country pushing back, this may be low-hanging fruit and give a boost to local COSs. It would give people in the COSs and some of them wanting to start one, a simple project, possibly start a brush fire in the Liberty Movement. What do you think?
Well, I think the person has a lot of good ideas. I think they should step up and become a district coordinator or a state coordinator or something in their county, take some position, get active, get hold of the people within your district and within your state by getting a hold of your district coordinators. Or district leaders, shall I say, and at that point, you know, and brainstorm some stuff and we can share it with each other. I don't know that we want to put too much effort in certain things. I mean, it could be a good idea to start with masks to some degree. I think a lot of that's going to disappear real soon anyway. It certainly is not going to go to the point of law. I don't think the president will put up with that, and I think he'll intervene at some point when the governor goes that far to try to force people to wear masks, and there'll be disobedience on such a great level, I don't think that they'd be able to enforce it anyway. The people will speak out just by not doing it. I mean, I'm done with that myself to some degree. But, you know, so anyway, some good ideas there. Let's get involved. Get involved. Get a hold of the district leader. If you have any problems with that, get a hold of Jan. Jan will assist you. You can find him on the directory. Real quick, the district leader is here. We want more. But here's some information about district leaders. And this is the breakup. I believe I'm sharing my screen right now.
Yep.
You can see the 10 districts here that we've broken up. And then we have the districts. We have Alaska. We have Oregon. We're broken up by states and also district numbers. Okay. And so you can find someone by looking for your state. You can find a contact, whether they be district leaders or state coordinators. But we need a lot more. We need a lot more. For instance, let's take, and some of these coordinators, I believe, are controlling more people, more states other than their own district. You know, for instance, let's take this here, Alabama, Mississippi, Louisiana, Texas, and Illinois. And, let's say just Texas, Louisiana, Mississippi, and Alabama. We have one individual covering those states. And again, we can use two, three, or four individuals covering those states. And, of course, we need people on the state level. And then, of course, the whole idea is to really, the purpose of the district leadership and the state leadership really is for trying to work out the organizations within the counties, within their states, and making sure that no county gets left behind, so to speak. Anyway, this is where people need to go to get information. And if people want to get involved with that kind of thing on their level with the mask and stuff, that's fine. I think by the time you organize, I think we'll be past that. But it is an issue that could be used to get people together.
The governors don't. There are six governors or seven governors that do not want this to go away. They're already talking about making it mandatory a law forever because they're so crazy. And that's because those six governors are going to be up on murder charges, so they got it's in their interest to drag this out as long as possible.
Well, that's why it's not going to last long.
Well, you know, I think you're going to get where they're not going to comply with the president. I think it's going to come to a showdown because there's no reason for them to comply. They're done. They're heading to jail, and they know it.
Yeah.
And so they're going to make a line in the sand here. The school systems are all writing up. All kids have got to wear masks and all this craziness, you know, and they're just marching forward. And I'm telling you, I got a lot of information on masks. I got all the latest stuff that basically says that they're bad, they're no good, they don't work. Even OSHA guidelines, and yet they still insist on putting this on their website. The WHO turns around and says, no, they don't work. But on their front page, they still say that you should wear them. So they're saying two different things at once. So that way, when they get in trouble, they'll say, oh, no, we told people that we changed our mind. You know what I mean?
Why don't you put an information page together? Get the information to me, and I'll create a page for it.
Yeah, they're
look
vicious.
Look, download, watch videos, or whatever information you have. But on the one hand, but we need to be, even though we can discuss these things and maybe get active in some of these things, I really do feel that once the, you know, look, I don't see us going into his second term to wait for that to get the arrest going. I don't see that at all. I see the arrest as imminent. And once that starts to happen, and I think a whole bunch of things are going to happen, and the people, you know, he's letting the people see. You know, that's why things are taking so long. The people are starting to see, and that's what's key. You know, anybody listening to X22, Dave puts out a good report over there, and he lays that out pretty good. The people have to see what's going on. You can't tell the people because the other side will say, oh, that's a conspiracy theory. Well, no, the people have to see for themselves, and the people are seeing. And as these things are unfolded, and so videos will come out of horrible things taking place with these individuals, the information on the, you know, all the people that died in nursing homes, for instance, with these governors, all of that people are going to see as time goes on. And I think between now and the election, I think it's all going to be all unfolded way before the election, and things are going to happen. So, you know, it is a nice way to use that because people are frustrated and people are upset and people are angry. So it is something you can use to start talking, to stimulate people to look into these things and start, you know, disagreeing and saying, I'm not going to wear it. I'm not going to wear mine. I like Bob's, Robert's response. I got COP or COP or something? What's
COP,
that called?
You just say, COPD. I have a health condition that precludes me from wearing a mask. They're not allowed to ask you if they say, well, what's the condition? They just committed a HIPAA violation and American with Disabilities.
And it's never going to go there. It's never going. Who's going to send their child to school with a mask to sit in a school, for 8 hours,
It's all ridiculous. Children die from having masks on.
Of course, I wouldn't allow my child to even go to school if they were requiring
masks. And if you look at the OSHA rules, it says you're supposed to change those masks every half hour, 20, depending on what kind they are.
It doesn't do anything anyway.
Well, what it does is it keeps your oxygen and it holds in the bacteria that you're breathing out.
Well, there you go.
So
that's what it does.
It does all negative things. And the N95 mask, you breathe out, you cough out. It's non-restrictive. It's meant for a contaminated environment like fumes. And so that N95 that everything's just so good, it doesn't protect the other person. If you got COVID and you cough in your N95 and he's standing in front of you, guess what? You're going to hit him with that spittle because it goes right out that vent.
Well, anyway, yeah, the restraint of the N95 from the report that I just saw just today, as a matter of fact, the
filter's coming in, not going out.
It's one-third. These viruses are one-third smaller than the actual prevention of whatever it is that they're trying to prevent. But, yeah, look, it's clear that masks prevent...
Common sense tells you, because when they're working with viruses, they're in a freaking spacesuit. So if
they medical... then you got the glass and everything. But the medical mask that doctors wear just is really, just so their spittle or anything doesn't spray.
That's made for a sterile environment, and that's just to keep the operating field clean in case he coughs.
That's it. Exactly.
It's not for anything else. And those clog up quicker than the N95, and you're supposed to change them every 20 minutes.
And I don't know how they breathe.
After 20 minutes, they're already clogging. So you need to change them. And if the employer's not giving you those masks, he's committing an OSHA violation. You see, everybody's stupid. The laws are there, and they're not following them. And then everybody's scared. There's so many people that are afraid to take that mask off. We've had people locally here. We got one girl, the linings of her lungs sloughed off because she wore the freaking mask so long, she ruined her. She's got permanent damage now from the mask. Because she was one of these people that was very OCD about it, and now she was germophobic to begin with, so she wore that mask like, oh my gosh, And it's more religion almost, and it's a good way for them to see who will comply. And I'm telling you, if you put a mask on and you tie it around your neck, they're fine with it. They'll never tell you to put it up over your nose, because by putting it over your neck, it says, I'm compliant. I'm trying to comply. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So I stopped doing that. I stopped wearing it because, I used to pull it down and all that baloney. I don't do it anymore because I refuse to. And if they want to bang me over the head, that's fine, because they're going to lose, because I have all the information that it's detrimental. And plus, they can't enforce it. It's not a law. It's an edict that basically is unconstitutional. It ran out after 30 days. Even though he keeps renewing it, he's supposed to renew it with a reason. And I'm telling you right now, all the medical science says there is no reason. We have herd immunity already, and then right now we should be taking the mask off. And by wearing the mask, they're actually making people sicker. And the longer they can keep these stupid people in masks, the longer people are going to be sick.
I think we need to put a page together where people can get educated on this and watch videos if they want, or whatever information we can give them. So get that to me, and I'll put a page up for us. And, these things are important to discuss, but we don't want to spend too much time, because really we want to spend time on educating ourselves, understanding the law, asking those questions, legal situations, how do things work, this mindset that people have to have. But all these other things, they play a role to some degree, of course, and we should deal with those issues, and we should put information up and bring them up from time to time. But again, a lot of these issues, this and there are many other issues, even though we have to deal with them to some degree, and we can, again, educate and inform and put a page up, and people can use those things to help to organize, and because some people are so focused on some of these problems, that is a good way to get people involved, and then they can see what's really going on and see how they can get the powers and the authorities. But again, a lot of these things are going to fall by the wayside as we get closer to being where we should be, and that is government outside of our lives, ultimately, you know. But anyway, I digress. Over to the next question, Jen.
Okay. This goes back to a question from last week, and it says, I am working on my affidavit to request the proof of claims from the Kansas Department of Revenue, but I have the following questions. Is there anyone willing to check my affidavit for wording? And two, how long should I ask for a response? Thank you for your time and help.
Well, they can get a hold of Jim, intake@nationallibertyalliance.org. Just write a note, put your phone number in there and your contact information, and send it to intake@nationallibertyalliance.org. Jim can direct you to places where you can get a and download a sort of a structure for writing an affidavit. And I'm sure he'll be more than happy to assist by looking at that affidavit and maybe pointing out, well, you don't need to bring this up or you don't need to bring that up. You know, the key thing to an affidavit is to say as much as you can with as little words as possible. It's an extremely important point. And stick to the facts, only the facts, just the facts, ma'am. Remember that program, what was it, the Dragnet, you know, just the facts, ma'am. That's what we want, and that's what you want to say. You don't want to make it colorful. You don't want to get lost and go down this rabbit hole and that rabbit hole before you know who knows even what you're even talking about. That's why you got to stay focused and on point. So I think Jim might be able to help you on that. I'm sure he'll be willing to, you know, kind of look at your affidavit and give you some ideas, thoughts, and points. And you can take it from there. As far, I'm not sure exactly what it is that they're doing, what that agency is particularly, and presume it has something to do with tax or something, I don't know. But, you know, when you're doing an affidavit, you know, and again, I don't know how they even plan to even to file that affidavit, because these people, they don't want to talk to you. And once you talk to them, if you tried to talk to them and you made contact, you would find yourself talking to a filter instead of them, which means a lawyer, you know, because they don't want to talk. And but we have to turn this around, because that's the major problem in our country and our nation, is that these people that we have elected and have gotten appointed by elected people or hired and under the control of appointed and elected individuals, these people have been trained not to talk to us, not to give us anything more, or not to respond to our questions. We got to turn that around, because that's not a government that is proper. When an individual has power and authority and they're asked a question, they have a duty to respond and speak and explain and respond to your questions. They should not be going looking for a lawyer or trying to hide behind a lawyer or just ignore you, which is what bureaucrats do. And hopefully, we're going to get enough people involved to take back this nation and change that whole process. They have a duty to speak. And when someone has a duty to speak and they don't, that's fraud. And that's a fact. It not only is a maxim in itself, when a person, an individual, has a duty to speak, then it's fraud. And if they remain silent, it's fraud. And the United States Supreme Court has ruled on that on numerous occasions, too, so that could be used. But you probably are going to be ignored. But who knows? Maybe not. Again, I don't know exactly what the individual is doing. And maybe there's lots of individuals. I don't know. Next question. How many questions do we have, by the way? Because I don't want to spend too much time on this.
Right. There's only two short ones left.
This
comes from someone who would like to send this form letter out to all the sheriffs in her state. It says, Dear Sheriff So-and-so, is the county sheriff's department working with any local militias in case a situation arises where more armed posses would be necessary? I am representing the National Liberty Alliance, which is working at organizing militias throughout the county, all over the USA. It would be very helpful if you could arrange an introduction or have someone call me. We want to be sure there are active militias in each county, but we do not want to reinvent the wheel, if you know what I mean. I'm
exactly.
Looking forward to hear from you. Sincerely.
Okay, well, send them an email with some basic information. Hopefully they're listening, but the information, to connect them with Robert. I'm sure Robert will be happy to assist them and work with them because he's working with sheriffs and even going outside of his state. I don't know if he's involved with sheriffs outside of his state yet, but the plan is to extend and expand. Go there and also organize in your county. Anybody contacting a sheriff, anybody is free to do that and talk to the sheriff about anything. But if you're going to use the National Liberty Alliance name, or you're going to use the Unified United States Common Law Grand Jury's name, and nobody on the state level is using the state grand juries yet, but they should be using either the national levels at this point. I mean, we can work. We'll have to think how things work out in the near future on that. But right now, anybody that's going to use our name here, we want to make sure that we're all connected and we're all on the same page and that we don't do anything that's wrong and that we don't go to the extremes. So we all have to be on the same page. Robert, I believe, and Gerard, of course, is working on this. So connect with Robert and Gerard. Jan, if you can send Gerard and Robert's phone number to them and their email. Make that connection, that'll be helpful. But again, we do have a plan at some point when it's time, if the sheriff in your county may not know about you yet. Well, you want to wait off until a certain point, until you've structured your organization in such a way that you can't be refused when you go to the sheriff. They'll see that you have a well-thought-out plan and that you're doing things properly and lawfully and that you have a written structure and a plan. You know, you have to have resolutions for the county, coming together as a group, as a meeting for the county, which you're working out militia, and you're working out the committeemen, and also, the administrators for the juries. And then we want to connect the sheriff into this. But first, you want to structure yourself. It may be the case that we have a sheriff in your area, or at some point in time, maybe we'll be aware of that. And that's already involved or excited about working with the NLA plan, and we can make the connection on a premature level then, because the sheriff's already on board. If you approach the sheriff prematurely without a plan and a structure with resolutions that make it clear that you're being as lawful as possible, you're doing this sort of by the book, so to speak. Okay, then you're going to be able to bring that sheriff in, and he's going to feel comfortable working with you. But if you're coming in chaotic, and you're coming in without a plan, and there's nothing written down, and you don't have resolutions, and you're unorganized, you know, there's going to be a little leeriness there. And then when you try to talk with them about the law, you know, if they're not up to understanding about the common law, it's just not going to work out. So, again, get educated. Sounds like these people already are starting to do that and maybe already have done that. Get connected. Connect to the plan that we have. Make connection with Robert and Gerard on this because they're working with the sheriffs. And we'll see what we can do together. And again, that's the case with everybody. And anybody can get a hold of Jan and say, hey, I want to do something. I want to connect with the sheriff. And I want to go talk to my sheriff or whatever. Connect them. Jan will connect you with Jan and Gerard. You want to say something, Gerard?
I just want to say, I would strike that line that the NLA is starting militias. That's not true. That could
Correct.
Cause trouble.
Did I say that?
No, that's what the letter says. That's why I'm piping up. You don't want to do that because we're not doing that, and that would be bad. The people are starting. We're teaching the people about the militia clauses of the Constitution, and we're encouraging them to talk to their sheriff. The people start the militias. NLA's got... It's not running a big, because they'll label us as a subversive organization starting an army. You know what I mean? You don't want to go there. We are a teaching organization, and we can help organize them. We can give them plans, but we are not starting the militias. That's an important point, okay? And any sheriff that knows anything about militias, he's going to say, well, who's this group starting militias? You know, he'll be coming in to investigate us, which might not be a bad thing, but you know what I mean. We don't want to go there.
Okay, so anyway, that's why we want to work things out in a proper fashion by organizing properly, documenting our organization, getting resolutions. We have a structure already put together that which are resolutions that everyone, I think, would agree with. Everybody could tweak them, but people could do whatever they want. we're free and independent, but nevertheless, we do want to try to stay as uniformed as possible and then add on whatever we have to that uniformity. But again, you want to make the sheriff, first of all, realize that you're serious people and that you've done your homework and you're really trying to get the law back in place, you know, the natural law, the common law, in opposed to the civil law, and connecting to the sheriff and supporting the sheriff. And also, again, well, again, you know, let's do it step by step, uniformly. Talk with, again, we have Gerard and Robert working on this national plan. Connect with them. Get some insight. I know sometimes people want to step quickly, want to get it done, want to do this. Look, at sometimes you got to step back and take your time. If you're organized well enough, maybe you can. But again, you do want to have a you know, a plan laid out on paper, which is what we're teaching here at this particular page. And you do want to have resolutions. And, you know, we have a book on the militia, okay, how the militia is structured, how things work, whether it's the regular militia or the what's the two? One's regular, of course, and the other one is...
it's organized and unorganized.
Yeah, but there are two other words, but that's good enough for us right now. So organized and unorganized. The thing is, and it should be organized, even the unorganized in a sense, but the thing is that we do have a book Brent wrote, and it's a booklet. Everybody should that's involved with this should get a hold of that booklet. You can find that booklet on the right-hand side of our website, by the way. You scroll down, it should be on pretty much every page. It's Militia of the Several States by Brent Allen Winters. And you should get copies to give to your sheriff. And along with, you know, we have a sheriff's page also. And all right, thanks, Terry. We have a sheriff's page also that we have a sheriff's handbook, which we will be updating because we're working on a book right now, and that book is going to be updated. But it's there right now, and you can use that, and we'll be updating it. You want to get that to your sheriff. You want to get a copy of the Constitution to your sheriff. And we have other booklets that we're working on that you'd want to get copies to the sheriff and get them connected and get them into the courses. Their deputies should be in the courses, learning what they can. And again, a book will be out soon, and when that's available, that'll really have pretty much most of everything in it. And with you know, with an index and also a reference where you can look up the meanings of different words that you know, and get their meanings, and everybody would then feel very comfortable about doing this lawfully and correctly. Also, of course, in our courses, we have the free militia course, okay, which really is the booklet, but people should be taking that. It's a good primer. Of course, we have the civics course, and we have the government by consent course. All these three courses should be taken, and you could take them all at the same time. You know, spend a half hour on this one, maybe 20 minutes, half hour on that one, however you want to do it. You know, the civics course is about 120 hours. I'm not sure how long the government by consent course, maybe someone could pipe in and tell me if they've took it, how long it took them to get through it, how many hours they think they spent on that. But... and the militia course is a short course, so that's not too long either. But those three courses are important. And inside the government by consent course is a much more focus on the Constitution. We used to have a constitutional course that really has been shut down. Anybody taking it will be able to finish it, but we really want them to take the government by consent course. It's much more in-depth and more, you know, detailed. So anyway... educating yourself, structuring your county organization. Also, something else was mentioned was the committee of safety. I guess until you become a committeeman, you can call yourself a committee of safety, and maybe that's what the group in itself should be called. We're trying to lay out a plan uniform across the nation, so it would be maybe. Your state, let me see, your state Liberty Alliance whatever county. So in my case, it would be NY for New York, NY Liberty Alliance, Dutchess County. And that's the name you should give your group. And basically, that group should be identified as the Committee of Safety. I think that would be a great idea. But remember, the creating of the Committee of Safety, you really want to organize and stimulate the committee man, because the Committees of Safety morphed into the committee man back in the early, in the birth of our nation. And so that's where really people need to be. But you can still hold the name or the idea of being a Committee of Safety within that county. So that is an interesting way to look at that. We'll think about writing that in that way. But again, we have all these instructions here, and we'll be adding more. We'll take it from there. Okay, any other questions, or is that the last one?
No, we have one more, John. What are the 19 essential services that the government is meant to do for the people, and where can I find this list? If it's too long or not available right now, then my main question would be, are the duties listed anywhere, and do they include controlling our behavior, social distance and masks, even in a pandemic, or mandating any health decisions, vaccines, even in a pandemic? What real laws can businesses stand on to defy the mask enforcement to their customers? How would I respectively question the sheriff to see if he upholds the constitutional rights of the people?
Well, the answer is in the Constitution of the United States of America. And this is key now. Remember, you know, anything that is not, you pull the Bill of Rights in here. That's why people need to be taking our course. Okay, look at, you want to learn this stuff and get into the details and get down to the nitty-gritty of what powers and what authorities these people do have, how far they can go, the jurisdictions, and anything beyond that, they don't have power or authority. Remember, anything that controls your behavior, that's your job. It is not the job of government to control your behavior. Of course, we shouldn't get out of line. And if we do get out of line, common law is there to correct us. We don't need civil law to correct us. We have common law, which will make much more proper correction and also looks to really restore not only the injured party, but also the individual who injured that person, to restore both, because God is interested in the soul ultimately, and repentance and you know, bringing yourself back to where you should be as an individual. But in any event, the key here is found in the Constitution, okay, the U.S. Constitution. And if you go down to Article 1, Section 8 of the Constitution, this is the powers and the authorities they have right here. If you go into our course or get our book, and even I think some of our booklets we have this, we have a breakdown list, and we should have it on the website too, a breakdown list of all of the titles. And what agencies or you know they control, okay. Now the state has the same structure, but here is the key to that. The state, many state constitutions go far and beyond what their powers and authorities are. The people cannot give power to the government more than that would bring them to the point to be able to control another individual. So the state government as well as the federal government has no authority to write any kind of codes or regulations or statutes to control your behavior. That is key. Okay, and again, if you know, common law is very simple. Okay, do no harm. It doesn't get any more difficult than that. If you do something that harms somebody, then you have to be held liable for that, and there is a process with to restore that individual that you have harmed under common law. It doesn't get any more difficult than that. So we don't need statutes, we don't need regulations, we don't need anybody to tell us anything, that we need a license to drive a vehicle or any of those things. But of course, you know, we need to get to the other side before these things take effect, because they've created a nation of slaves, and people don't realize that they've been enslaved statutorily. And so we're in a statutory prison. You don't do this and don't do that. You get rid of a code here and a code there, or a statute here and a statute there, and you go to court and you're shelling out all this money, and it just goes on and on and on. It's RICO on steroids, it's a money-making machine. It doesn't do any good. Okay? So If you want to know what powers and authorities, right here, Section 8, Article 1, Section 8 of the Constitution, will lay it out. And in our course, we get into details on this. But the key to this whole thing that really, and this is something I learned through Bible studies, you know, for instance, you interpret the things, the Bible is interpreted by the Bible. Same thing with our constitutions. You know, you lay out the ruler of that constitution by looking at the Bill of Rights. Anything that they do that violates or affects your liberty that's listed in that Bill of Rights, anything they're doing or trying to do or requiring you to participate with is null and void. Okay, it's wrong, and they have no power, no authority. You can challenge that, and if you do your homework and educate yourself, you'll be able to successfully do that in a court of law. But once we get to the other side, of course, right now, you know, it's a crapshoot on whether you're going to get a judge that's going to play by the law or play by the civil law. And if they're on the civil law, it's a whole different thing. So the Bill of Rights is the key, okay? It's called the capstone of the of our founding documents, you know. The Declaration of Independence is the foundation. It's the law of the land. Ultimately, it relates to the law and our relationship to where that law comes from, which is nature's God. And then the Constitution itself is the framework, and the Bill of Rights is the capstone. But that governs, that capstone, that governs the whole process. Anything they do that violates one of your unalienable rights, okay, right of due process, right of freedom of speech, right to assemble, right to bear arms, or the militia, and on and on and on. If it violates any of that, it's null and void. They cannot affect it. So they can't force you to make a mask because they'd have to write a statute to do that or a code or something, and then they'd have to bring you into their nisi prius courts, which are administrative courts, and again, all of those courts need to be shut down. And they will be shut down on their own when executing the process of law if we, the people, step up, organize our counties, form a committee of safety within your county, let's call yourself that, and connect with the people, connect with the sheriff, get things going, take control of the political process through the committeemen, take control of the courts in your county, which is state courts, through the administrators. Come together as the militia. Everyone's part of the militia. Come together as the militia. Work it out with the sheriff, and we'll have a true nation where we have by the consent of the people. Gerard, John, did you want to pipe in?
Yeah, there's just a little wrinkle here because he asked, "What can businesses do to resist the mask?" The trouble is if you have a business license through the state, as many businesses do today, you got a problem because they control you when you have a license, because now you've given up some of your rights and they can tell you what to do in that business. I mean, some of these licenses are, why do you need a business license to cut hair? Oh, it's hygienic and all this. That's a bunch of baloney. Anybody can learn those things in an afternoon and they can maybe hold you to those things. But as far as them licensing you to cut hair, that's ridiculous. What's a license? A license is permission to do something that otherwise would be illegal. In order to work on cars, you have to have a registered shop. You have to have a license to work on cars. Well, why would that be illegal? So, to work on somebody's car and charge them to work on it, you need a business license. And they control you through that license, and that's what they did with the guy that was cutting hair. They took his license away. That was the first thing they did to him. I mean, he had
statutory prison.
That's right. That's so. I just wanted to say, you know, don't think you're going to go in and say Bill of Rights and this and that, because they're going to laugh at you and say, "See this license? You sign this. It means that you agree to everything." It's kind of like joining the service. You know, when you join the service, you're actually giving up certain unalienable rights because you're giving them away by
I think the people are responding to this and just ignoring it now. I see a lot of people. Look at. I go to a place often. I go in to buy different things, a gas station, so on. People behind, they got that plastic there, but behind it, they're not wearing masks. I don't wear a mask. Most
they don't
people
wear
going in that place
don't
wear a mask.
It's killing them because they can't breathe, John. They're taking it down.
I have a friend who has a pizza shop, and I went out to his pizza shop, and since the very beginning, he's never wore a mask. He does have the plastic that makes people feel better, but doesn't have a mask. No one's required to wear a mask, and he's been serving in his pizza shop since the beginning. I go to the post office, and most of the people behind the plastic there, again, they're not wearing masks. I go in there, and I don't wear a mask in the post office.
Well, they're not subject. They're federal employees, so it doesn't matter.
So there you go. But the point subject. The point is, look, at they can't arrest everyone. They can't fine everyone. At some point, they're just not going to be able to get away with it. But I think things are getting better, and I don't think we have to spend too much time on that. Not that we don't have to spend any time.
No, but it is a good form of resistance to put them in their place, because that mask says, I will comply. That's all it says. And now we know enough that they're damaging, that you shouldn't be wearing them anyway. And anybody that tries to force you to wear it, they're asking for a big lawsuit, because they don't have the authority to force you to wear it.
Well,
we can prove that it's detrimental. So, you know, I tell them, call the cops. I tell the one guy, I got into a confrontation with a girl at McDonald's, and she said, you can't come in here. And I said, look, I'm 20 feet away from you. I just want to, I said, besides the fact I got a medical condition, it doesn't matter, we have a sign. I said, so what? You have a sign. I said, you know, in Jim Crow days, they had signs too, said no blacks. That didn't make it right. There's still a lawsuit, right? And anyway, you know, I got into, you know, everybody's eyes were real wide, but I didn't have a mask on. I didn't put a mask on. If more people did that, it educates the public. That's all. I mean, like you said, I hope it's not going to last much longer, you know, and it shouldn't. Certain state. I mean, look at Nevada, never locked down, never made anybody wear a mask in Nevada. And their cases are low, low, low. It didn't make any difference. So, okay.
All right. Okay, so we're going to move on here. I think we're done with the questions, right, Dan?
Yes.
So I'm going to pass in a minute or two, I'm going to pass the controls over to you, Gerard. First, we're going to look for Brent. Is Brent unmasked?
Unmasked.
Unmuted.
Yeah. The truth unmasked. I like that guy. What's his name?
There he is. He's unmasked. Oh. Hey. Talk to Jan how you can come in here as one of the,
moderators.
Moderator, okay. So that you can mute and unmute yourself, you know.
Just so I remember, I know I shouldn't talk about this now, but I want to get you on the phone. Heather Lee has this guy who's a paralegal for 35 years, and he's private paralegal, and anybody that I ever come in contact with that was a private paralegal, they're usually pretty common law. They work for the people. And he's willing to work with us, so I'm going to get him on the phone, question him, and I may want to pull you in.
Well,
at
connect
some point.
Him, yeah, definitely. Look, at we're looking, and I meant to make this mention when I was talking. We're looking for paralegals. We're looking for people who can research. We're looking for, of course, the district, the county, and state leaders. We need people. Look, you don't have to have a skill to work with us, but if you do have a skill, it really benefits us. You know, secretarial, paralegal, researchers. A lot of people, you know, you Google, you get to learn the researchers Googling. So a lot of our information is really gotten from Googling. We need people. We also need people who make phone calls for us, ultimately calling other members, working within committees. We've got lots of committees, which maybe next week, maybe Francine should come on and speak a little bit about all of the committees we've got going on and give sort of an overview. They meet all of the committees and the different things that we're doing, and a lot of leadership. They meet on Monday evenings. I think it's 7 p.m. Eastern or 7. I think it's 7. But you'll have to. Jen, do you know what time it is that they meet? Was Francine here? Francine's here. What time do you guys meet, Francine?
We meet at 7:30 every Monday. 7:30
okay.
Eastern every Monday.
Okay, so connect and get involved with our different committees and groups and organizing things. We have a committee that makes phone calls, okay, calling our membership ultimately, trying to get people activated or reactivated. We have a lot of people who have fallen asleep, and we need to wake them up. They came on with leadership ideas. They wanted to take leadership roles. They've taken them, but then they kind of fall asleep. And to some degree, that's our fault because we didn't continue massaging them, so to speak. But, you know, in the beginning, you know, and still even today, it's hard to really try to keep people active. People got to get active on their own. They got to step up and take control. It's your duty. You have to, if you don't want to, you know, do it for yourself, and if not yourself or your neighbor, do it for your children, your posterity. Let's take back America. Let's make America great again. Let the people have government by consent. Okay, with that, we're going to move over to Brent Winters. He's a common lawyer. His website is commonlawyer.com. He's the author of a few books and some booklets. One of the books is The Excellence of the Common Law by Brent Winters. And again, on our right-hand side of our website, on any page, you can scroll down and you'll see the militia of the several states. Click on that, and you can go over and purchase the handbook. And we'll have other handbooks available, too, soon. So with that, Brent, well, first of all, Gerard, you got the controls, right?
Yep.
Okay, Brent, you got the mic.
Thank you, John. Thank you so much. Again, my comments are my own. They may or may not comport with those of the leadership of the National Liberty Alliance, but if they don't, they'll probably say something. I won't have to worry about explaining that. Usually they do, though. I want to make mention quickly that we started last Saturday. We started to teach a class on due process on Saturday mornings. The platform there, and the one that we used to use here, freeconferencecall.com. You can go to the website, www.commonlawyer.com, and see what you have to do if you want to participate in the class, 15 weeks, 2 hours a session, and we're talking about due process. Due process is our common law. Our common law does not include due process. Our common law is fundamentally due process, because our common law is about the way we do things, the manner, the course of process. We focus on that. All the rest of the world focuses on the result. And when you focus on the result, the ends justifies the means. At common law, it's just the opposite. The means justifies the end. What are the means? Due process. And the course, we call it, the course of our common law. Well, you can look on the website and see how to participate. We've got a page there you can go to. And if you want to participate, email me from that web page, commonlawyer.com. Go to the contact button, and you can email me from there. About 5 years ago, I think it was 5 years ago, first time I said anything on these Monday night calls. And I remember when I did it, I was traveling in a converted van, converted to a camper van, and I received an invitation to do so, to participate. I didn't have internet, so I parked my camper van in a McDonald's parking lot where I could get a signal and made a short presentation of an occurrence that affected me dramatically, and I haven't talked about it since, and I'm satisfied now the audience is different than it was then. Not everybody is different, but some are. And what I want to talk about is your right to stay silent in action. Your right to stay silent in action. And I'm using the example of what it takes to remain silent. I'm using the example of six of my children and my wife. No person shall be compelled in any criminal case to be a witness against himself. That's the United States Constitution, Amendment 5. And because prosecutors can make words spoken respecting a non-criminal matter become a criminal matter, especially using a regular civil tax audit, your right to remain silent is always available. It doesn't have to be a criminal case. I found that most lawyers don't understand that because they don't have need to. But no, it doesn't have to be a criminal case to claim the right to remain silent. Anytime the government wants to talk to you, anytime any employee of government, even a school teacher or a fire department fireman, any government employee or someone working at the behest of a government employee wants to talk to you, you have the right to remain silent if you believe that the information that you would give in answer to any of their questions could provide a link in a chain that could lead to a possible prosecution. It doesn't make any difference whether you're innocent or guilty. You can be either. If you believe it could lead to a possible prosecution, there's nothing in our law that says that anybody is required to slit their own throat with their own tongue. That's the fundamental. That's the fundamental. Guilt and innocence have nothing to do with it. Bottom line, even if you're guilty, our common law, and rightly so, says, even if that's true, the law doesn't require you to slit your own throat with your own tongue. It says the law does not require you to provide the rope for which the government to hang you. If they want to hang you, they got to go through the modest inconvenience of buying a rope. Well, to keep silent in the face of force, arrogance, intimidation, badgering, screaming, arrest, brutality, and abuse takes knowledge, conviction, wisdom, courage, confidence, and grit. You say, how do you remember all those adjectives and stuff? Well, no, I'm reading them. I'm reading them out of a book by yours truly called, what's it called? Your Right to Remain Silent, the Fifth. No, let me look up here at the top. I know it's, Don't Talk to the Police. Some people say that's a clever title. It's got a picture of, what's those two fellas' names in the old silent movies? Well, you can go look at it. Don't Talk to the Police, The Ultimate American Weapon. That's the name of it. A Common Lawyer Comments, Brent Allen Winters. You can get this book, I think, at Amazon.com, or go to the website, commonlawyer.com. If you can't get it, email me. Say, I don't see it. I don't have a way of getting it. There's nothing. Well, if there's a problem like that, let me know, please, and I'll do what I can to get you a copy. This is, for a long time, was the most of all the books that I've written. This is the one that's been most in demand. Well, excuse me, I just sneezed. Early in the year 2009, your commenter's wife, Susan, and their five daughters and one of their three sons was swarmed with eight county deputies, myrmidons, working at the behest of state judges and federal prosecutors to abuse them, intent upon baiting their father, that's me, arresting him and jailing him. Before the attack was over, hours later, Susan and her adult and minor children had suffered these deputies' verbal, emotional, and physical brutalities, intimidations, and threat of the same. In addition to being arrested and mercilessly badgered, assaulted, and physically abused, Susan and our hearing-impaired daughter, Casey, were falsely imprisoned and charged with a crime. That really happened. In all of my experience with clients, reading of history and appellate cases on the matter, I have yet seen or learnt of a better instance of self-composed discipline, steadfastness, and downright pluck in Americans holding to their constitutionally protected rights, and especially the right to keep silent. Your commenter, that's me, his family, Susan and six of their children, made him to understand that the Fifth Amendment right to keep silent is natural, alive in the soul, waiting to be quickened when need arises. Shortly before these abuses occurred, as Susan and six of our children were about to leave our house to drive the short distance down the ridge to the local high school, I had reminded them that I was under false indictment by a federal grand jury and that government agencies, state and federal, had by that time been dogging our heels, stalking us and threatening us with criminal prosecution. I said this, Because we are all under real accusatory danger, I said, do not speak to any law officers or government employees under any circumstances or for any reasons. Given their unnatural spirit of aggression nowadays, talking can only give them a crack at a false accusation. I said, keep your lips buttoned. Susan and our six youngest children then got in her van and left the house, as they did most every evening, to walk around the nearby high school's quarter-mile athletic track. However, a couple of hundred yards from our home, county sheriff's deputies, with neither a hint or cause nor reason for suspicion, stopped Susan's van and ordered her to step out of it, separating her from her six children still in the van. And though Susan, without hesitation, complied, he then further told her to step behind the van, bringing her near the front of his cruiser. And upon this additional request, Susan smelt a rat, but again complied, believing that even though unreasonable, the request thus far did not prevent her from doing right. But upon the deputy's questioning her, she refused to answer without her lawyer. That's me. Without her lawyer present. Then, without warning, in retaliation, he grabbed her arm, whirled her around, slammed her face down on the hood of his squad car, handcuffed her, and locked her in the back seat of the cruiser. Meanwhile, her oldest daughter, Casey, then aged 22, had exited the van on the passenger side from where she had witnessed the deputy's lawless arrest. The deputy then tried to question Casey. Also, but as her mother, she remained silent in the face of his attempts to banter her. Now, she's hearing impaired. I'm dropping a footnote. She instead pulled out her cell phone to contact her father, that's me, further riling the deputy, whereupon he reached for the phone with one hand and with his other hand ripped it from her grip. Then, using his tight hold on her wrist, he wrenched her around, forcing her face down on the hood of his squad car as he had done to her mother, handcuffed her, and locked her in his squad car with Susan. Though Susan never resisted, the deputy had called for backup while he was handcuffing her. Seven other deputies, having by that time arrived, one of them, without warrant or cause, opened the side door of Susan's van, separated the next oldest daughter, Jenny, age 20, from her four minor siblings, Christy, age 17, Joy, age 14, Clark, age 11, and Jill, age 10, by ordering her from the vehicle. The deputy then threatened to summon Child Protective Services, that's DCFS, to take the minor children away from their family, quote, forever, if Jenny did not answer his questions. But she also refused to talk. All the deputies then teamed up on the minor children still sitting in the van. For the next hour and a half, they badgered and tormented them, screaming at them, ordering them in and out of the van, commanding them to sit down and then to stand up, all the while attempting to get them to answer questions. Nevertheless, each of them held steadfast to their right to remain silent, refusing to speak, just like their dad told them. The deputies then took away the keys of the van, tried to keep the Winters children from calling their father, that's their lawyer, and refused to let them walk to their father once he arrived. I finally got there. Because Jenny had been calling me. I was working in the basement. The deputies continued over and over to threaten all six of the Winters' children, saying, your father has taught you well. Now listen to this. This is amazing. They said to them, your father has taught you well. You know your rights. But then they added, we are going to teach you that exercise of your rights will get you into trouble. Now, I took that as a quote from my children. They told me over and over that's what they said to them. Upon their father's arrival, the deputies repeated this same threat to him. Sure enough, the deputies did retaliate further, falsely jailing Susan and Casey, telling them that they were under arrest for keeping silent. That's what they told them. This is laughable, I suppose, but it's brutal. You're under arrest for not talking? However, knowing such a charge was impossible, two of them got a couple of thick paperback law books from the trunk of one of the squad cars. I saw them doing this. I was standing there, but they wouldn't let me get within earshot of anybody. They got these two big books out, and after much flipping of pages and haggling among themselves to decide what charge might fit, while your commenter protested under threat of arrest unless he kept silent. They finally found a statute forbidding, and I'm going to quote the statute, obstruction of a peace officer in the performance of his duty. But throughout their ordeal, Susan, Casey, Jenny, Christy, Joy, Clark, and Jill, age 10, remained silent, refusing to fall before the deputy's lies, threats, and child abuse. Our common law right to keep silent applies in all conversations and circumstances, I'm still reading from the book, but especially during contact with prosecutors, police, agents, and other government employees, such as judges, and including unpaid government conspirators, such as lackeys and snitches, whether the matter to be discussed is thought to be criminal or non-criminal. In all events, one is unwise, indeed downright foolish, to ever speak to anyone concerning any matter in which one may be accused, whether accused rightly or wrongly. Moreover, the wisdom of the right to keep silent demands that one need never speak to anyone employed by or acting in collusion with any government entity or agency, state or federal, from school teachers to firemen, from IRS agents to sheriff's deputies and prosecutors, if asked to provide information concerning any potential criminal matter. And remember, criminal liability nowadays is not always according to law, but according to the legislator's command, the bureaucrat's impulse, and the prosecutor's creative passion. In short, where government is moving toward being total, as it is in our country, claiming power over every aspect of life, every matter is potentially criminal. Remember, a crime in all countries, including our own, is always defined the same. Here it is. It is a personal offense against the sovereign. Personal offense. So in all the rest of the world, you see, we'll just take, for instance, the Roman Church. All crimes that canon law are against the Pope personally. That's the fundamental of the law of the city. All crimes in Japan during the days of Imperial Japan were against the Emperor personally. All crimes in Germany during Hitler's reign were against Hitler personally. All crimes in France during Napoleon's power were against Napoleon, personally. But what about us? What about us? What is a crime against in our world? Well, it's against our sovereign. Who's our sovereign? Jesus Christ. And all crimes, friends, neighbors, and kin, are against him, personally. That's who crimes are against. David, Psalm chapter 51. David, king of Israel. He coveted, lied, stole, committed adultery, and murdered his neighbor. Coveted, lied, stole, committed adultery, and murdered. He broke the last five of the Ten Commandments in reverse order. And he said in Psalm 51, confessing his sin, speaking to his Maker, he said, against thee, and against thee only, have I sinned. Well, what about the fellow you murdered? What about your nation? You're the king. Well, no, primarily and firstly and foremostly, he sinned personally against his true sovereign. And all of his other sovereigns, the emperors and the kings and the empresses and the prime minister, whoever they are, whatever they call them, the sultans of the Arabic world, those are false sovereigns. No, they're just goofy mortals like the rest of us. And their theory of crime, Mussolini's Italy, all crimes were against him personally. That is the fundamental of the law of the city that governs every country in the world except the common law countries. Well, now, even in our common law country, we make a mistake. The people of so-and-so versus so-and-so. No, bottom line, if we don't see it this way, we've fallen into the trap of humanism. Humanism where man becomes the measure of all things. That's circular and it's silly. Well, a crime. If we don't see crime the way we ought to see it, if you don't see it as against the true God, if you don't see it that way, then who's it against? Your neighbors? No, it isn't. Not first and foremost and primarily. And any other point of view is pagan. It's just flat pagan. Man is not the measure of all things. He's not God. Well, add to these things the seldom acknowledged truth that even if the officer confronting you never twists what you have said against yourself, untold numbers of other government employees with access to what you reveal to that man may not be as honorable. In all events, if a grand jury subpoenas your comments from the memory of the honest policeman to whom you spoke, he must give that information to the grand jury by testimony or face possible jail for contempt or even perjury, not to mention the social pressure of his fellow officers' accusations and unfaithfulness. How often have you heard it said, even from a police officer, hey man, don't you trust me? Well, that's not the point. Maybe you do trust him. But if he's put under oath, If he's put under oath and asked a question, he has two choices, the right to remain silent or to speak. Do you think he's going to remain silent on your behalf and tick off a prosecutor and get and take the chance of being thrown in jail for contempt? Never. No. He's there for a paycheck. And if he has to sell you down the river, don't think he won't do it. Don't think he won't do it. And if he refuses to do it, he'll face the social pressure of the criminal law industry, all his buddies down at the courthouse. Hence, every matter for which a government employee seeks information is potentially criminal. I remember years when my children were little, we used to go to church. I lived in a little town. There wasn't just little towns around us, two or three. Went to an old church there. There was a school teacher went there. We didn't send our children to public school. I don't know why anybody would do that. Shucks, public school, they're shooting people in public schools. Now they're saying they got to wear masks. And by the way, when they're there, they claim power, parens. What do they call it? Paris parente. I forget how to say the Latin word. What it means is that the government is parent of your child when you turn them over to the government. You have no more say, no more, no. Not while they're there. You have given that up. You want to delegate power to the government? I just read the other day, of all of the statistics, but of all of the people that participate in the riots and the Antifa and all this craziness that's going on, the most represented occupation there is school teachers. Well, it stands to reason. For a lot of reasons, no sense going into that now. I've got to see where I find a... I'm circling the field looking for a place to land here. I'm going to find a place to stop. Oh, I can do that here pretty quick. Well, policemen and government agents have become ever more underhanded in playing false with the loyal, law-abiding American. Like my children. What threat did they pose? They didn't pose any threat, but they wanted those children to commit treason against their father. Let me say that again. Those government employees that badgered my children for an hour and a half abused them, wanted them to commit treason against their father. What is treason? Disloyalty. Disloyalty. I told them, do not talk to police officers when they left the house. You know, it was funny why I told them that. Just before that, there was a policeman in San Francisco, California, at the BART station. I believe it was New Year's Eve. Yeah, New Year's Eve. I believe it was the year 2009. That was in 2009, I think. And they arrested a bunch of teenage boys and girls that were not hurting anything, just maybe they'd been drinking. I don't know, but I saw the video of it. Somebody with a cell phone took it from the BART train. They had them face down on the platform in the BART station in San Francisco. BART, that's Bay Area Rapid Transit. That's the train that runs under the San Francisco Bay and over Oakland and Berkeley and all those places. Bay Area Rapid Transit train, they had them on the platform, like the subway kind of in New York City. Well, they had them down on the platform, on their bellies, had them handcuffed, and I saw an officer, he went astride, put one foot on one side of this lanky, long, black kid, had his handcuffed, hands behind his back, pulled out a pistol, and fired a 9mm round right in the middle of his back. Killed him instantly. And that had just happened. And I told my children, things are crazy. Don't talk to any police officers. Boy, they didn't. What is treason? Can you commit treason against your father? Sure you can. Can you commit treason against your employer? Sure you can. Can you commit treason against your country? Sure you can. Can you commit treason against God? Yes, you can. And at common law, all those things are crimes. Two kinds of treason fundamentally at common law. Grand treason and petty treason. Grand treason is treason against your country, the sovereign. The state, a sovereign used in a limited sense. petty treason is treason against your employer, to whom you owe a duty of loyalty, against your father, against your mother. Is that a good thing? You bet it's a good thing. Aren't we missing a little of that today? A little? No, aren't we missing it nearly entirely? Honor thy father and thy mother that you may live long on the land that the Lord your God has given you. That's what we're missing. The only remedy for lawlessness is true law. And we cannot use true law unless we know something about it. What do you know about it? What do you know about it? I don't know as much as I want to know. I'm still worrying over it, like a dog worries over a bone, trying to gnaw it down, chew it, as it were, cud. Do you do that? You've got to have it in your mind first. It only comes in two volumes. The laws of nature, unwritten. Unwritten, and the nature of things, that's our common law, the law of the land, due process, and the laws of nature is God written in that book called the Bible. That's what our Declaration of 76 says, and that's what it means by what it says. Are we willing to hark back towards our origins and look there for a sign? If we're not, we're doomed. That means irreversible judgment. I think I see that that could happen. Well, doesn't have to. Gerard, back to you, and thank you again so much for a little time to talk.
Okay, thank you, Brett. Very good. I'll remember that when they have me handcuffed.
Yeah.
Okay. Man. All right, so we got a couple of people going here, and we missed Dan last week, and he's on the top of the list this week, so he's been holding his breath since last week. I'm going to release him now. Go ahead, Dan.
I tell you what, if that wasn't an awesome talk, I've never heard one before any better. And with that said, while he's right fresh, I'd like to ask this for the benefit of all our people. If you find yourself in a situation where some of these, I call them Lord Edwins, as submitted some kind of, paper appearing, attempting to harass you as to be someone that you're not, and which is a misnomer, and usually it's a nom de guerre. And I was finding myself about a month ago in court, and I informed the judge at that time that the other party, which is questionable whether this person is sane or not, be able to abate and change the paperwork. Now, I held the paperwork, and I wouldn't get into the bar. I was out in the audience, and the other party that was questionable wasn't there. And I asked for a dismissal that it was likely that I felt before I ever came that this person would not show up. And so all of a sudden the DA comes in there and says, a lady, she sort of gets out of her chair and goes up towards the judge. She says, Your Honor, I have not noticed, and I won't call this person's last name or anything, or name at all, or his family name. And so right then and there, the state was ill-prepared. And I said, listen, I'm ready to try this case right now, except for the fact that I am telling you that I am not on the person that's on this paper. So that's the one reason why I'm willing to tell you that your deputies or whatever has brought me in here, and I want to know the nature of, you know, this paperwork. And if you correct it, at some point, or the accusing party corrects this, well, we're not going to have no abatement. And I said, then okay, let's have the trial then, right now. I said, I'm ready. And then he studies a minute or two, and then he says, well, I'm I'm trying to decide whether I'm going to hear this case, because he didn't hear me tell him what a misnomer was in my statement, and I named the girl, and that this paper is not me. So I gave him ample opportunity. It's what I'm trying. I hope people will get out of this right then in the first court to get the paperwork for next time come around when he denied me, you know, right then and there, a dismissal before the next time comes around for them to correct the paperwork. So I'm asking you, Mr. Brent, and others, especially you, to comment. If you go back into court about August, I believe it's 7th, continued, and the other party is not there, and I believe the term, y'all forgive me, but I believe it's called corpus delicti, immediately that you demand right there a motion when that person, again, the second time is not there, or in fact, if the DA doesn't go ahead and dismiss it. And if you don't do that and you just remain silent and they say, all right, Mr. Stanland, come around here, you know, and all this kind of stuff, and go, I'm going to say, we honor, could you tell me where the bar is, because the opposing party's not here, and I don't know the nature of this call. How would you handle that, Mr. Brent? I don't know whether y'all are still... Are y'all still on?
No, he's probably muted.
Thank you for muting me.
There you go.
Well, if they don't show up, then the government, here's what's going to happen probably. The judge is going to give the government a break. The judge always gives the government a break because the government takes precedence. And I mean, even when you look at the rules, the federal rules of civil procedure that we follow in the courts, the government always has more time to file their appellate briefs and to respond to this and respond to that. And don't forget, as we like to say, all those people that work in the courthouse, you've got the sheriff's department, the probation officers, the prosecutors, the judges, they all have the same prefix on their phone numbers. They have the same area code, but they also have the same prefix because their telephone system is all one system. Well, that means they're all in the same courthouse, and they have this attitude in courthouses and federal courthouses, we're all on the same team. And so they naturally know each other, they see each other every day, and that creates an unhealthy camaraderie. That's why, for instance, to make a big picture here, when the government of the United States was formed and Washington's buddy from France did such a horrible, stupid, screwy job of designing that city, can't even find your way. That's what the French will do for you if you let them design something. You know, the French design, they survey everything in a circle. The English survey everything in a square. That's why Washington, D.C. is impossible to find your way around. It's confusion from start to finish. But I'm from a place where the French arrived first in the Wabash Valley, and those towns around there are surveyed in circles. It's an odd, everything's like a pie. The streets all come out from the center point, and like Vincennes, Indiana, and Terre Haute, places like that. But all the people in the courthouse, or I was going to talk about Washington, D.C., they did do this and did it properly. They put the White House 1 mile. The White House is 1 mile from the Capitol building. The Capitol building is where the legislative branch is. The White House is where the executive branch is. They did that out of symbology to show the separation of powers. But it wasn't until much later, I believe it was in the 1930s, that they took the Supreme Court out of the Capitol building, which was the Congress of the United States' headquarters, and moved it to a separate building. The Supreme Court used to meet where the Congress meets. But they did that to show separation of powers. That's what you're fighting here when you're in a courthouse. There was a Supreme Court justice during the LBJ's administration that would not attend functions at the White House, even when he received an official invitation from the President of the United States, Lyndon Baines Johnson. And he tried to encourage the other Supreme Court justices to not do it either, because he said separation of powers is too important for us to even give the appearance of being friendly to the President of the United States. I agree with him. When you go to a courthouse, you've got prosecutors there. Well, that's the executive branch of government. Then you've got judges. Well, that's the judicial branch of government. Those are to remain separate, do they? Not at all. I served as a county prosecutor for 30 unusual days in a small rural county. I talk about it quite a bit because it was a traumatic experience to discover how much of an attitude there is in courthouses of us versus them. This is in small town America over 20 years ago. An attitude of us versus them. It's one big happy family there. The sheriff's deputies, the prosecutors, the clerk, the judges. When I left after that 30 days, I filled out a fellow's term because he couldn't fill out his term. And he asked me if I would. I did. But when I left, the judges, the clerk, all the secretaries from all the different offices, and who else? The prosecutors, of course, the ones that were there, beside me, there were one or two more. They came to me and said, thank you for helping us. For helping us. You know, they feel like they're in charge of the county, and they're the ones that keep the county straight. And that's all very wrong. And it's something we haven't remedied in America yet, as they did at the federal level. You tried at least symbolically keep them separate. And by the way, it is true, if you don't agree, you may not agree with the Supreme Court's decisions, but the Supreme Court, they're independent of mind, have been in the past. I don't know what they are now. There's a bunch of weirdos, it looks like, almost. People you wouldn't want to let your children get near. I'm not exaggerating. I wouldn't let my children or grandchildren near some of those Supreme Court justices. They're clearly self-avowed perverts. And the same thing's true of a whole lot of other people in government. Government seems to attract that kind of people. And I have a theory about that. And I think, well, it's more than a theory. I believe I'm right, and I may as well just say it. I won't say it here. I'll save it for next time if somebody asks. How the hell's that? Then I'll know you're interested. But it is true, and that's why government is dangerous, like Washington said, like fire. It's a dangerous friend and a fearsome enemy. And the only tool they have is force. But back to your question, what should you do? Well, you should object. Judge, I object. Just say, Judge, I object. And don't worry about the Latin words. I object because they're in default. If they don't want to prosecute this case, they should drop it. And move. Say, I move this court for, I'm thinking of the right words. They're not Latin words. Oh, here it is. To drop this case for failure to prosecute. They're not prosecuting. They're lollygagging. Lollygagging. By the way, that's a whole lot different. People don't realize it. That's a whole lot different than dilly-dallying. Dilly-dallying is different than lollygagging. You can go look that up if you'd like in the meantime, but accuse them of lollygagging. And tell the judge. He'll know what that means. Well, that'd be my advice. That's what I would do.
That is great advice, and I hope a lot of people got the punchline there. When you got right to it, you didn't mess around, and especially if all people knew, and I failed to say this, but I let the judge know in that first session that I'm a Christian individual, and that this paper's not me, and that I added this to it. I said, and I'd already let them know outside where they had us standing before we got in the courtroom, and I said, I'm not going to be a surety for a fiction. This is not me. And they were very nice about it outside, but they made us stay outside in that heat for many hours until it was about 12:30, 1 o'clock, and the sheriff came out there and that knew me. He said, Mr. Stanley, we need you in the court. And he says, I realize that your phone, that we couldn't text you like some of the others. And he'd already told me earlier that they wouldn't be there past 12 o'clock. And that day, but yet it was way past that time when he the, the the deputy sheriff came out and which knew me. So boy, we hustled and got on in there real fast.
Uh-huh.
Got in there, and then when I don't get into the bar, I ask them, you know, in a nice way, the nature of this case after a certain point when he denied me because the opposing party wasn't present. And I hope a lot of people will understand right then and there that I could have stated that the DA who went approached the judge, she stated that she said, Your Honor, we have, I did not talk with this other party and alert them to this case today. Right then and there, the state was ill-prepared, and again, I asked for a dismissal in a nice way, and boy, it was over with. The judge, when he heard me say that I'm not going to be a surety for the fiction, I'm a Christian individual, and my yes is my yes, and my nay is my nay, in other words, like the Holy Scripture says we're to be, that all they'd have to do is in the meantime, if they're not going to dismiss this case, have this opposing party, if he wants to proceed, to correct, just call in, correct the paperwork at the top as to who I am. He said, we're not going to, I said the words abatement. And, of course, I'm reiterating this real quickly and so people can understand. So, would you, after you understand, he says, finally, he's sitting there, the judge is like Johnny Carson. You know what I mean? One time he was spellbound by his guests. And he said it out in open in the court. He said, I'm trying to decide whether I'm going to hear this case. And so he tried to put it way out, you know. And that maybe it might go on somebody else's turf as to hear it. But the point after saying this to you, and boy, that was a great response. If I went back at that moment and the individual is not there, I'm pretty sure they're going to have to dismiss the case without me saying too much. But at the same token, I'm already certain, as you know, they're not going to do an abatement of changing the paperwork as to who I am. So that from a Christian standpoint, I hope everybody here tonight realizes that we can't do some trickery as a Christian. We have to be solid truth. That's what common law is all about. And so to bully me to be in subjection of some paper that's not me is not what our Heavenly Father, the Heavenly Father would, like you said a while ago, would naturally want me to be truthful and would stand up and object, like you said, well, object. So if I don't, if they still again want to put this case off further or something and they don't dismiss it right there, because I doubt if this individual is going to show up at all, and if he does, they're probably going to try to force me to their illegal twin paperwork purporting to be me when in fact it's not me, and which I have a problem with. So if I do, here's the next question. If I do, if they really do try to try this thing, if I remain out inside of the audience and I do, and I make a statement, I don't know the nature of this case here, and why I am being subjected to come up here with some paperwork's not me, for one thing, that I brought out at the beginning, and here I'm back up here again, Your Honor. And I do not go in when they say, all right, Mr. Stanland, come on around here. And when I say, Your Honor, if you don't mind, I'd just rather stay right here. I don't want, I'd like you to point out where the bar is here. And I can speak right, you can speak to me right here if you're going to continue this trial. Well, son, they don't. Their whole procedure is to manhandle you and bring you into a court martial by bringing you into the bar. When they say, all right, Mr. Sandland, come on around here and come through these swinging doors. Whether the party's there or not, what would you, if you didn't do it, and then from there on, if you remain silent after a certain point from there on that you're not in no way willing to participate and they will not adhere to you saying, I ask for a dismissal. This is the second time around. This party's not here. If they try to continue. And if I stand outside from there on and remain completely silent from there on and don't participate, what do you think they would do?
Well, I can't predict that except to say if you stand mute, that's lawful to do. You're not obliged to do anything or prove anything if you don't want to, but it would be a good idea, I think, to, and always respectfully, you'll never get anywhere doing anything else, demand respectfully that the judge drop the case because
sure.
The prosecution is not willing to prosecute it. It's disrespectful for prosecution to do that. If they can't prosecute it, they don't have time, then they need to drop it. It's that simple. They're going to have to. That's what the prosecutor is supposed to do. Pick and choose what's important and prosecute those cases. And it comes down to a matter of how much money and how much time and how much help he's got to do it. And if he doesn't have any, well, that's the people of the county are going to have to remedy that. But to drag things out and violate your rights and lollygag and dilly-dally even and take up your time is unlawful. And
true.
You should say it clearly that way. Now, if the judge invites you to come up, that's by invitation. That's by invitation. The only people that are allowed up beyond that rail are parties to the case that are their counsel, and anybody else that the judge says can come up there.
Right.
He's the one that has authority to decide who can come up there. And the reason for that is just to keep good order in the court. That's what it's all about. That's the habit that's been that way for centuries. That's nothing new. That rail there is called the bar. It's the bar. And when you cross it, crossing the bar, you're not in any different jurisdiction than you would have been otherwise. It's still at the invitation of the judge. You're in the courtroom. Either the court's going to rule it has personal jurisdiction over you or it isn't. But standing there, now I would advise this, though, and I thought your idea was a good one. It's respectful. And I don't think the judge would get upset about this, but I don't know. I don't know your judge in your state, but you made the comment. You would say, I'd just soon stand here, judge, if it's all right. You can hear me. I can hear you, and if that's all right with you, I'd just soon stand here. I think that's a respectful thing to say.
Another thing in closing, because we got another individual that's wanting to get on here, and we have to respect that, and I don't want to eat away from too late for our guys, you and others, John and Jan and all the others, Gerard, is that you can also state to the Honor that, Your Honor, if, this is the second time I've come up here as to, you know what I stated in the beginning, I don't think I need to reiterate that here today.
Uh-huh.
And the next thing is that, would you please tell me if whoever has been damaged, this is another thing I want people out here in America to understand and hear. If you also will tell me, Your Honor, if there's anyone here today that has been damaged. I mean, after all, this is not a capital crime type thing. You know, I mean, I didn't shoot anybody. I didn't cut anybody. I didn't attempt to assault anybody. It's none of that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And it's pretty much civil. But I can sure say after stating that, then if he answers and that, you have anything, Miss Madam DA? And she said, well, she'll probably say, well, no. And I said, well, thank you, Honor, and I make a motion right now that if there's nobody that's been damaged, then I thank you, and I'm asking you for respectfully for asking the court respectfully for dismissal.
You can do that.
Maybe some of the people out here could understand that too. Might help.
Yeah, you can do that, and you make a point, but I don't think it'll have any legal force. And
you probably not.
You're right. No, I don't think the judge won't respond to that. Not to say that it's the wrong thing to say, because if you say it, you're making a point. You're asking them for evidence of damage. That's what you're doing, and there's nothing wrong with doing that. But don't belabor it. I don't think the judge responds to it. No, I found they don't. They just don't.
I'll make one other real quick. Excuse me. Go ahead, Mr. Brent.
No, I'm finished. Go ahead.
Okay, I'll make one other a little brief comment, mm-hmm. and that is in regard to this matter at that time. Mm-hmm. If this party came, I think it would be soon that the judge would understand that this is frivolous because the individual probably would not pass a competency test. And I say, Your Honor, I want to respect your court or this court, and I assure you, whether we would even get the abatement issues out of the way, that I am satisfied that for the benefit of the state, that this individual here probably should go through some kind of case management and be subjected to maybe going before a physician with a signed statement after this person has been checked out whether this person is competent or not. And I think that for the better part of justice that this court could benefit by having a continuance, and I'll be willing for to come back if we were to initiate a competency hearing and whether this individual was competent enough to back up the allegations of what is on paper. And already, Your Honor, you understand that this individual didn't show up mm-hmm. to start with. And so I would ask for the court such that I'd make a motion to that effect, that this individual be proven that is confident for the state to go forward before we can go forward.
Mm-hmm.
So that's some other things I wanted people out here and, you know, out in our land to hear. You've done a nice presentation tonight, and you've humored me enough here, and I want people to understand in closing about 10 seconds here, if there is nobody that the state, the DA, can bring forward that's been damaged,
mm-hmm.
then that's the elements right there you as a sovereign or a Christian are to establish in a courtroom as for your not being, you know, guilty to start with.
Mm-hmm.
Is that if nobody's not, if no one's damaged, then that's the elements of a tribunal or any procedure in a courtroom. If there's no damage, it's frivolous. It's frivolity on stilts, so to speak, the paperwork.
Mm-hmm.
So that's my little take on it, but thank you for doing the real good take and expertise on, you know, this little scenario. I hope a lot of people will benefit from this.
Well, good talking to you. Thanks for calling.
Absolutely.
We'll
you
talk
too.
To you.
Always. Okay.
All right.
Thanks. I'll turn this back over to Gerard.
Thank you, Dan. All I got to do is remember my lollygagging from my dilly-dallying, and I'll be good. Anyway.
We'll all remember that one.
Yeah, I will. That's pretty good.
And not anything else. I'm going to look those up right now again. I may have forgotten the exact definition. Go ahead, Drew.
Steve from Georgia, go ahead. Steve, you've been unmuted. 770 area code. Steve from Georgia. Unmute yourself, or you are unmuted, actually. Did we put you to sleep? I guess we were lollygagging too much, huh? Steve from Georgia. Somebody muted you and unmuted you. Are you there? All right, I'm gonna go ahead and I'm going to open up the next one, and then if Steve comes back in, I'll try him again, but we're running low on time. So let me get, we got Barbara in here. I don't know what state you're from, Barbara, but go ahead, Barbara. You've been unmuted.
Hey, thanks, Gerard. Can you hear me?
You're a little low, but go ahead.
Okay. All right. Oh,
that's better. That's much better.
Okay. Good. Great. As last week, a caller got on at the end of the show, and he was talking about a sign for trespassing, and he said he was going to send you the link. And he thought it was Right Way Signs. I looked it up. I couldn't find it. Did he send you a link?
I don't recall seeing that. What was it? What do you think it was? Right Way Sign?
Yeah, he said, I wrote it down when he was speaking. He said he thought it was called Right Way Signs, but he wasn't
sure.
Oh,
yeah. That was, okay. I didn't, look in, I have to get my other mail open and see. But I don't have.
I like the idea of.
I don't know if I have your information, Barbara, to send that to you if I did get it, because I didn't.
Can I give you mine? Should I just send it to you? I'll send it to you?
Yeah, send me your information so that when I go through and look, I can send you he actually told us what it was, but I didn't write it down, but he said he'd send it to me in an email. He may have. I have to go in and look for it. See.
Okay. Yeah, he said he thought it was Right Way Signs. I looked it up. There is a company called Right Way Signs in Chicago, but all I could see is that they sold business signs. But anyway, he was going to check it and make sure it was right. So that would be good. I just wanted to bring up two things. Didn't want to draw them out. I said I don't want to take up too much time, but the mask thing, I've been looking it up also quite a bit because, and the physical harms and what agencies have said what, because our local mayor sent out this really imperious note about you must do this. Otherwise you're harming other people, and I really feel it's out of line. I think it's a really kind of a dangerous trend because it puts people in a mindset that's, telling them to submit, and it really changes people's behavior. I don't know. I heard that in Texas they're fining them $2,000 plus for not wearing it. I don't know.
A lot of states they don't have a fine, but if they do and they fine you the fine, I would just appeal it to the appeals court because most of this stuff isn't making it past the county appeals, and if it gets up into the state, it seems that the judges understand under the law that this is really not a law, that it's really not enforceable. So I would just resist it that way, you know. I mean, if they think they can hand out an $8,000 fine like that, you know,
$2,000, yeah,
or $2,000, or even $500, I don't care. You know what I mean?
Right.
They should not be able to get anything like that. And I don't think that, you know, well, we know it's not legal, and I would fight it up to the federal level if I have to, but I don't know that you would have to. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Right. My son has got a letter. He's going to be a junior in a private college in Pennsylvania, and they told him that he's going to have to wear a mask, and that he has to social distance, and that they're going to do surveillance testing on him.
They're going to do what testing? I'm sorry, you kind of went away.
They call it surveillance testing.
Surveillance.
And I looked it up. I looked it up online. It's surveillance testing, RE COVID. They said that they take a demographic group and they test them, and they said they're going to do it randomly and selectively or something. I don't want them touching him because I know that there have been two tests in this country in which they were found to be contaminated. I don't want them taking his DNA. I don't want them, setting him up to track him. I don't. And also, they say the CDC itself, Burks herself, says oh, it's positive when it's when you had the flu or you have the flu shot or you had everything. It's such a scam. I want to tell them no. You know, you touch him, you know, I'm doing something. I mean, anyway, I don't know what I can do.
Well, I think he could refuse. I don't think they can hold him to that. I don't think he has to participate.
Okay.
You know, I mean, what are they making it a condition of going to the college?
I don't know. I have to talk.
I mean, they may. I don't know if it's like a contract, but I would cross that out and say, you know, no or refusal or whatever. I wouldn't sign into it, you know.
Right. Okay.
So, you know, okay. I did get that was Jay Zitlow with the signs, and he sent me something, but I can't make any sense out of it. He said you can get those signs and little stickers to put on your car window. I don't know. I don't understand that. But the thing is, it's not the sign that we were talking about. You know what I mean?
It seems like what he was describing had too much information for a metal sign. It sounded incredibly lengthy.
Yeah, they put it in little writing. I've seen those signs, you know what I mean?
I mean, it cited $5,000 fine and everything. Have you seen that?
Wait a minute. This is Jay. I tried to send that no trespassing sign to this address, and it came back undeliverable. Your art at National Liberty. Well, it's going. Okay, but I told him to send it to my other email, which he did because he's writing to me. So I don't know what it's. I'll have to get a hold of him. Apparently, wait a minute. Okay, he did send a website link. Three emails later. Oh, here it is. Lawful notes, no trespass. Boy, it's a little tiny writing. You know what? I'll get your information, your email from Jan, and I'll forward this email to you. Okay?
Okay,
here's a whole bunch of them down here. They're small, but he's got red ones and black ones and 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. There's like 8 or 9 different ones that he gave, you know, and apparently, the company is in here, okay? So I'll send it to you in an email. That's the best way because there's a lot of information here. All right?
Okay. So you have the information. I don't need to give you the last name.
I'll get it from Jan. Okay?
Okay. Can I just ask you a little more?
Yeah.
Time? Okay. You said something about there's 6 governors and something about they're up for indictment. You know, something about
I think there's seven governors that packed up the nursing homes with COVID patients to drive the numbers up, and they claimed they were following federal guidelines, which federal guidelines did not tell them to do that.
Yeah.
You know.
Okay.
So
are they just being investigated, or where is the process?
Trump has already said he's going to go after them. Or Barr, I don't know if it was Trump, Barr said that they, you know, it's premeditated murder is what it is.
Oh, it's horrible.
Yeah, so they know that something's going to happen. That's why they don't want Trump to be president, because they figure if he never makes the presidency, then they can get rid of Barr and nobody's going to pursue the thing and they'll be fine. And so that's the other reason I think they're being very draconian with the mask and all this. And, oh, the numbers are up because they're doing a lot of testing, and they're finding a lot of people that are positive, but they're asymptomatic, which means they're already immune. It's a bunch of baloney. It's a scam. They punked us. You know what I mean? It's a bunch. You know, we already have herd immunity, which would have happened faster if they hadn't locked us down and had masks put all over us. And 97-98% of the people survive it, and most of the people that get it barely get a sniffle, and so it's turning out like it's a bust. That's why John says he thinks it's going to go away. you know, look, at they're going to make a lot of noise and a lot of rioting, whatever else they can do to distract us to try to get to the election and hopefully steal votes from him, because they don't want him to get in. They don't want Flynn to start talking about what he knows. They want to silence him. They want to silence Trump. And these seven governors, they got big problems on their hands.
Yeah.
So if I were them, I'd be packing my bags so that I can get on a boat and sail to China or something, because that's the only place they'll be welcome.
Yeah.
So that's the story.
I saw an interview last week with G. Edward Griffin, and the interviewer asked him, what do you think of Trump? What do you think of him? And he said, well, I don't know. And he said, well, come on, you know, what are your thoughts? He said, I can't talk about what I don't know. And then he was saying that I just think, what I do is I try to think like those in the deep state. And if I was in the deep state, I would want someone who looked like
you're really faint now. I can hardly hear you.
Okay, can you hear me now?
Okay.
Okay. How about now?
Go ahead, talk.
Okay. Yeah. So, did you hear what I said? Should I repeat it?
So you said if I was in the deep state, I would want somebody to look like Trump. Is that what you said?
I would choose somebody who you know, the people thought was worked friendly to them. But instead he would be doing things that weren't good for them. And then you go to G. Edward Griffin's website, and he said, well, think of this. He said, if Hillary Clinton was in, people wouldn't let her put 5G through. But with Trump, they would let him do it because they figured somehow it would be okay. So I don't know if this, I mean, 5G is terrible, and he promotes it. What's going on there?
No, I don't know, because, you know, Trump says one thing and does another. He's always claiming he's playing 5G chess. So that's very important. The vaccine and 5G is important, and that remains to be seen. They're not going to have a vaccine anyway, and I don't believe that it's going to be an issue, and I don't think that he really... Nah, first of all, the disease is already done. You can't make a vaccine. And they've been trying to make vaccines for flus for years, and they don't work. When they do make a vaccine, they have to change it every year. This is a coronavirus. It's the same. It's the same as all the other flus.
But it's not a vaccine. It's an IV-2020.
Nevertheless, we have herd immunity. Nobody's dying from it. There's no deaths. It's not a pandemic. And they're not going to be able to justify giving it to everybody.
But the insider.
Look at this. If they're going to do mandatory vaccines, they're going to have a revolution, because there's a large amount of people that will not let that needle go in their arm, and it's already got bad publicity, and people will fight to the death. And that's one way to start a revolution, by pushing those vaccines. And the data that's out there, that's released right now, and Fauci's been discredited, the World Health Organization discredited. You know, I mean, look, Trump has done an awful lot to hurt the deep state. And so my answer is the same answer that Christ gave when they said, when he threw the devil out of the guy, he said, you use the devil to throw the devil out. And Christ turned around, he said, a house divided will not stand. So that's where I go to with him. I mean, he's done so much damage to them. He's done so much to get rid of this child trafficking. He's put that border wall up, where they make all their money on that child trafficking and the drugs, and he's cut them off from that. Now, is he part of another faction that doesn't care? Is there families fighting? I can't answer that. I leave that up to God. I'm not going to worry about that, because if we sit here and wring our hands, he's good, he's bad, he's good, he's bad. You drive yourself crazy.
No, but you need to know, though. You need to, because you need to know if you have someone at your back, or if you have
absolutely... I understand that, but at this point here, we're going to know in a short time anyway. You know what I mean? And it doesn't matter. And what's the difference if Hillary's doing it or Trump is doing it? You still have to fight it.
You think they're going to take down the towers and the
small
cells? Are they
going to take
them down?
No, look, they don't have to use that hertz. They can change the hertz. They don't have to, even though they call, look at my phone says 5G on it right now. It's not 5G. It came out 2 years ago. And my Wi-Fi says 5G something. It's not 5G. It's not the hertz. I mean, they were pushing it back then, just maybe getting us used to the terminology. So, and I've read that the 5G that Trump's letting them put in is not the lethal one. It's not. It's really not that hertz. But I don't know. I can't tell you that for sure. And then you got guys that are going to be burnt. They were burning them down in Europe. They were burning down the cell towers. But look, we got a couple people left, and I don't want to go on too long.
You.
Okay. Thanks a lot. Yeah. Okay, let's see. Let's try Jim from Pennsylvania. Go ahead.
Jim in Pennsylvania?
Yeah.
Okay, are you talking about the no trespassing signs?
Yes.
Okay, I researched it last week. Add right signs.
Oh, I think she was saying it right way. So it was add right, Barbara, if you're... I'm sure you can hear add right, but I did. He did give me some kind of a link, and I was going to send that to her too. So, and you may want to look up add right. I'd look, but I got to go off the screen. I'm going to lose. I'm having trouble getting back to these controls, so I don't want to go off right now.
Okay, www.addrightsigns.com.
Okay.
I can give you a phone number too.
Go ahead, do it.
248-628-6652.
Okay.
They're in Oxford, Michigan. 4871.
4871. Okay, very good.
Okay, I just want to let you know.
Thank you, Jim. I appreciate that. That's on the tape, so you can... go back and listen to it. Anybody wants to listen to it.
Yeah. They're still there. I checked it out last week.
Okay. Thank you very much for that. Appreciate it. Hey, I see that. I was looking for Steve from Georgia, but he dropped out. Well, I'm going to take Sarah from L.A. What is L.A.? Louisiana? Or is it Los Angeles? Sarah, go ahead. You've been unmuted, if you can hear me. Sarah from Louisiana. Hello? Well, not having much luck tonight. And Steve from Georgia dropped off, I guess. Maybe he hung up. But if that's it, we only got a minute left. I'll just close it out. Going once on Sarah. Twice. I don't see any. Okay, I guess Sarah's not there. So, okay, everybody, have a good night. It's been a good call. And same time next week. I got a lot of stuff to go over and think about and do. And come back next week, bright-eyed and bushy-tailed, and let's get some stuff done. Thanks.